Mike and Leona gather playing some game. But I pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Leona gather playing some game. But I pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the RHAP B&B for episode 7 of Survivor 41. We had Matt last week. Urge is going on this week as we finally finish the merge, though I think we're still in this weird state of when the merge happened. Either way, buffs have been held by everybody at this point. So we are here. We have the urge to talk about what was an incredibly interesting episode to start off the post-merge period. Of course, let me welcome in Sans Whispering. We're talking at full volume today. Leona Boris. Leona, how are you?
I thought you were going to say, we have the urge to talk about the merge. So I have the urge to talk about the merge, or the urge, as you so lovingly called it.
I want to talk. Can I talk about your little like ba-dunch for a second? Because you've almost put like a ringtone onto it. You're like, ba-dunch,
yeah. And I'm gonna do the robot also. Good start to the podcast.
Would that be your celebration if you won an immunity challenge?
Oh, the robot. If I needed more evidence that I'm like so incredibly pale and white, it's like me doing the robot after I celebrate. I've always dreamed about doing the Michelle Fitzgerald kick something down, but like if there's nothing to kick, I guess I could default to the robot.
Well, I think it's a perfect way to welcome in, of course, our guest. She is a tried and true person to come onto the B&B, but she is one of the founders of reality TV Rehab Ups in general, a true legend, co-host of the Challenge Rehab Up. Allie Lasher, what would be your celebratory dance move if you won individual immunity?
There's no world I'm winning individual immunity, Mike. Like, I don't even need to think about these things. Imagine. I'm so happy. As you said, like, I love coming on the B&B. I say it every single time. It is my favorite Survivor podcast. And it's not close. I'm sorry to Stephen Fishback with the shade keeps growing. I should say this at the end, but like it bears repeating at the beginning and the end that it is insane what you guys do here. Like the fact that you are able to do all of these games, like you are the hardest working people. Like it's one thing to just come on and talk about the show like I do at the challenge, but to do limericks and scategories and everything else fun, I am just constantly in awe of the two of you.
Oh, the pleasure is all ours. That is amazing.
And it's weird to see your face and say this to you. Like, I'm like, over my camera, but I can still see your face. This is not helping.
Yeah, exactly. Like, no, we won't be able to see your face as you compliment us, but you can see our reaction. So it only makes it worse from there.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're very excited to have you. And we've got some weird ones in store for you today.
Oh, I love it. But I'm
I think that's what I would do. Be like, Mike, come on over. I go, and I start walking like a robot just to see how Jeff Probst would respond.
And Jeff's like, I've changed my mind. I've lied to you now, too. You did not win. Yeah. And I'm going to somebody else.
No, or maybe it's not.
The Matt chat at the beginning. Yes, the awkward man who did the robot to get on the boat in the back there. Yes, you. What's your name?
I am Mike Bot. I will be first robot to win Survivor.
They're like, is it too late to call out the alternate? Do we still have the alternate in Fiji?
No, I mean, this is how you get questions, though. Jeff's like, you're a robot. How do you play an intensely emotional game like Survivor as someone who can't feel? What's behind, though, that circuitry right now?
I have a gripe. I'm coming in with an old gripe. Old gripe. Like, we'll talk about the season, I'm sure, overall, but like, I normally come on and I've been like building like some animosity towards one of the players, not in real life, just like on the show. Mm-hmm. And I'm like ready to drop a hot take of like, this person is not my kind of guy or girl, but usually guy. I do not have that. Like, I love the cast of the season. This is a cold ice take, but the cast of the season is just a hot fire. But I have a gripe with the B&B. And your last guest, who is phenomenal and is famous, and Mike was so excited that he was going to be on. It was adorable. But to call the challenge a subset of Big Brother, can you imagine having such a horrible take? Like, how do you get up in the morning with that kind of a take?
First of all, yes.
The challenge predates Big Brother by 2 years. I don't need to like drop that, but it's on the ground now. Okay. It's dropped. My head fell off my body when I heard that.
I love this smoke being started between Ali Lasher and Justin McElroy. This is the rivalry that I want to see in the world. Mm-hmm. Rivals live. Have it be Justin McElroy.
If you've never watched the show, just say you've never watched the show. You don't need to shade it because you think that you're better than it. You're not. You're worse. You're much worse.
Yeah, I just lumped it in with the whole Big Brother pedophile category. I'm sure. Like,
wait, no. Perverts, not pedophiles.
Oh, okay. That's how I remembered
it. Is that weird? Do you not want to tell them, like, oh, like, I actually came into podcasting to, like, be, to win a competition of, like, how to watch, like, live feeds 24 hours a day?
That was.
Shut my mouth.
This was an unconscious agreement between Liana and myself. I felt the eye contact through the screen of, like, keep it cool.
Oh, if I had been here, you would have done, Liana. I was like, I can't believe you're saying this to her.
Let me out this bitch. Did you know? Fun fact.
We do the same show for Big Brother. Did you know that?
Yeah, did you know that? We literally cover Big Brother.
But he was great. God. It was so funny and all, like, I was going to say all love, but no, that was some hate. But otherwise, yeah. Great. Mm-hmm. Great episode. Great guest.
Well, I mean, to that note of the challenge, Ali, it is a pretty ridiculous thing. I mean, I don't know. I can think of maybe a couple of instances in challenge history where it's like, oh, you did this thing, but actually you got disqualified. So actually this group wins the challenge. But I feel like we've very rarely gotten that. As opposed to what happened in this episode, where it wasn't a disqualification as much as somebody did something separate, and now you lost the challenge and you have won the challenge.
It's very, I mean, it's definitely more in the Big Brother camp of like, we hit a button and now like the coaches are the players or whatever. But like, I have been thinking this whole season that the way they're playing it sort of fast and loose and the way the players don't really understand the rules, not quite to this part of it, but prior to this, is very challenge-esque. And one of the biggest complaints, I think, originally with Knowledge is Power, but then how Knowledge is Power really showed that knowledge was power. Everyone's been saying that this week about how the best part of the twist was that everybody knew about it and they could work around it. Brian and I say that on the Challenger Hap-Ups all the time. I don't care what you do. I don't care about fairness. I don't care if you're flipping things on their heads. But the players have to know when they're sending Erica that she's going to have a chance to change the game or that, you know, you may win. I don't know. That whole thing was bullshit. But just taking the challenge out of it. You have to know what advantages are in the game as a possibility so that people can strategize around it, because that's what makes for the great TV.
Well, and I think this episode is a perfect example of how everybody knew about the Knowledge is Power advantage. They were able to strategize around it, and we got some really fabulous television because of it. But it's not because of the advantage. It's because the players knew about the advantage. And I think that's such a key distinction to make.
And I'll give the editors this bit of credit. I mean, all credit to them. I love this season. I love the show. But like, I do think it's interesting. First, when I saw the goats on AstroTurf for the broccoli, and not that Bryce needs a shout out for me, but oh my God, his Halloween costume.
Oh,
like,
so
just
good.
Let me just take a second. Please go check that out if you haven't yet. I hated that at first because I was like, this is too goofy. Like we've moved into like too goofy territory. But now seeing where the Knowledge is Power advantage gets rolled out, it's like, okay, everything was intentional. The idols could only be found in a way that was public. That was intentional. The advantages, who's got advantages, votes, all on Ship's Wheel Island. Everybody knew who had what through that. That was intentional. And then even the Knowledge is Power. If Liana had found that alone, I would have, my head, again, would be popping off my body. My head falls off my body all the time. It's so hard to keep track of.
Cartoon skeleton. Your head keeps falling off.
But the fact that that was still built into a Ship's Wheel Island right before the merge, and then somebody else from another tribe has eyes on that, I think this is more by design than we're maybe giving it credit for, right? Maybe, like, and it worked, but only for that reason.
Yeah, that being said, what a great TV moment. I mean, it's really tough to say, like, what flashback moment has been my favorite, because the Goats on AstroTurf one was really like a one fist pump. This might have been a full two fist pumps, though. I mean, yeah, exactly. Like just up and down, like you're bench pressing. Because I mean, I think part of me was, I don't know if it was wishful thinking, but being like, something's coming. We got so much about Liana just like, you know, twiddling her fingers in confessional, Mr. Burns style, saying like, oh, I can't wait to blindside Xander, that something had to have been up. And then to just get the literal drop, not Allie's head, but the you know, the mic drop of, do you have an idol? No, but you can have this fake one. And then the rewind back to that. Just a really, really fun thing. I think your mileage may vary as to like everything else that happened after that, because then, you know, more tribal council whispering. I think people either love it or hate it. But just that moment alone was, again, to Liana's point and to Allie's point as well, a good reason why having people know about this new idea in particular ahead of time, the idea that idols could possibly be taken from you, really helped throw some fun spanners into the works. All you need is like a small grain of something and some really creative players, which we have, to turn it into a great TV moment like we just saw.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be a Debbie Downer. I never would do that. But I watched part of this episode with Dr. Amanda and JCR and Jordan Kalish and his little fantasy world in New York. And I was like, my immediate reaction, while cool and loved it, obviously, is like, oh, I was so gutted for Liana because she had this power. I think she got, there was this like unnecessary sense of urgency to use it in this extreme way, right? Like, I think this power 9 times out of 10 gets used by an alliance to just ensure that the person going home doesn't have an idol, that they're not using it to actually get an idol. It's just like a check. Okay, mm-hmm. We can still vote. It's a less powerful idol nullifier, basically, because they can find out beforehand, or more powerful because they can like change their votes accordingly.
Yeah, and they can take it from the person too.
Right, but I mean, like, it would just be like, okay, Mike and I are voting out Liana. Liana, just as a check, you don't have an idol, right? So we don't have to split our votes. Great. If you have it and I get it, amazing. But that's how I think this would be used most often. I think the pressure of like how good the cast is and how smart Liana is and motivated to make good moves in the game. Plus, I do think like Xander applied some smart pressure of like, well, I'm going to use this idol that's going to be for Evie. Like, who cares? Great. Protect somebody in your alliance, your stuff with Evie. Anyway, we'll get to this. But my whole question, my whole point of raising this, people are like, what is the point? I have one, is I started watching this episode halfway through and it because I got to the bar late. And then I obviously rewatched it many times. Don't at me. But it made no sense to me how these relationships dissolve so quickly, like why Liana was all of a sudden opposite Xander and Evie, why, whatever. And then when I went back and watched, it still didn't make sense to me. Mm. Sort of like how I started this talking about why I was upset for Liana and ended it with saying, I don't understand how the relationships broke down. It too did not follow like a good narrative structure from my opinion.
Yeah, I think it was a little tough to try to understand exactly what the new tribe dynamics were. I think part of that is because not everyone is on the table to be voted out. So you're already limited to this subset of people. So then, you know, why the only reason why Shan would want to work with the blue tribe is because of the alliance with Deshaun and Danny, then that has to bring in Liana. And then as we saw Shan convince Liana that, look, we all have to spill blood. You're just going to be the first person that has to do that just by process of elimination of, but then it's like, okay, but you could still vote out Sydney anyway. You know what I mean? Like,
or Nasir, not that I want Nasir to go.
Right.
But, yeah.
It just felt like those other options were just never on the table from the get-go, and it was never explained why. So was very confusing.
I think most of all, as exciting as this week was, this really proved that this needed to be a two-hour episode. This needed to be the urge needed to be combined into one two-hour block if they could help it. Because I think the first episode had more personal relationship-based stuff. And as Jeff says, I love how you talked about relationships. And then the second half was more of that strategy, more of that, like, I mean, a lot of the strategy was honestly around that advantage. And I think to both of your points, understandably so, was less about those interpersonal dynamics. Even outside of the Liana stuff, things like, why does Tiffany feel like, okay, I want to work with Sydney, considering that the last time we saw them together, they didn't like each other. And I, you know, Sydney talked to me about that afterwards, about how they actually got really close. And I think there were some gaps that needed to be filled in. I do wonder if putting this together as one big 2-hour block, and instead of trying to create this facetious cliffhanger of will Erica smash the hourglass, might help keep that in your memory to almost be like one overarching vote, rather than cutting it in half and having people sort of like lose the plot halfway through.
That's actually a really interesting point, because Erica was there for 2 days. That means that there was essentially 2 days of socializing for the entire merge tribe that we just never got to see, right? Because yes, they went on their feast. Okay, so maybe it's not a full 2 days, but that's a ton of time that people can socialize and interact and make or break new bonds. And the fact that we saw so little of that, I think that's part of the reason why it's a little bit confusing, Allie, with the relationships and how they ended up the way they did.
I have a question for you guys about the breakdown of the Yellow Tribe. But to that point, one of the other big things that why this hourglass thing was such bullshit to me is, like, to hear what you were saying about the 2 days, Liana, if you have 2 days and you're strategizing and telling people, I think we should target whomever, and then that person, you don't actually get a chance to vote that person out, and then the script flips, and now the people who are vulnerable with you have the opportunity to say, oh, well, Deshaun wanted you out, like, Nissi, whatever. Like, that is crazy. Like, you should not be open to thinking you're safe, and maybe you're making moves and you're throwing names out, and then those people can use that against you in a new context. Obviously, they can always use that against you, but not when they're also vulnerable, 1 out of 5 people to go home.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, yeah, because it essentially is the equivalent of, had Erica, like, saved herself with an idol and then came back to camp, and it's like, oh, well, this person wanted to party you. That all got packaged into this, like, little post-immunity challenge thing. For what it's worth, it seems like, and again, all the kudos to this cast, it seemed like they were savvy enough to not get mad at Erica proper. It seemed like a lot of them would have been like, I would have done the exact same thing. In fact, you know, Danny's rage was more so concentrated, as we found out in Exit Press as well, towards what the show is doing. Overall, I would say this was entertaining, but don't take this as a sign that you need to do this again. I think this was like, it worked for all the reasons that it shouldn't work. I am fine leaving this behind. Drop the twist, keep the other stuff, and let's move forward with it. But it did create some interesting dynamics, at least.
In your great exit interview with Sydney at Parade.com, it was so interesting to me that Sydney said she assumed that Erica didn't have a vote because everybody else has had to, like, pay a price. Now, maybe staying 2 days alone at Exile Island and not being able to strategize is paying a price. But that fascinated me that they were sort of building that in. So maybe that's part of why they weren't mad at Erica wholesale, because they just kind of assumed she was punished in some other way. But that blew my mind. And I also have to compliment you again, and this is the last compliment that I'll give, hopefully, is you asked, Sydney said something, I wrote it down because it blew my mind. She like ended a response to you saying, I hate everyone. And my reaction was like, oh my God, all I would say was like, who do you hate? And then Mike had another full question. So I was like, okay, Mike's going to let that drop. But no, and he sniffed for the drama, but in a professional journalism way. And you were like, on that note, in your final words, you say you're glad you're not on the jury because you didn't want to see these people again. Was that anger at certain people for turning on you, or more so at the situation, which is just like, what certain people? Like, yeah, I loved it. Exactly. I was like, brilliant, brilliant.
Sure. I mean, listen, you never know with the people that you're interviewing, like, how touchy they may be. On the note of Sydney, she was not whatsoever. she was, like, openly ready to spill that information. So, yeah, I was trying to approach it cautiously just in case things were rather sensitive. But more so, it seems like Sydney had the issues with, from her perspective, other people being sensitive. Like, she's like, oh, I don't care. I'll say how I feel. It's the other people that have the problem with me more so than I do with them.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask you guys about Yasa for a second?
Let's do it.
So I believe I'm watching the same show as everybody else. And it was Tiffany, Liana, and Evie tight. And there was a vote that we'll talk about later with Liana's like $1 million mistake. I feel like that's getting kicked around a lot now. Where they were going to take Xander out. And instead, Voce went out. Mm-hmm. Did Evie ever pay a price on television for that with Xander, or did Xander just eat it? Then they started winning, right? So maybe we just didn't see it. Was it a secret? Like, what am I missing that now Xander is going to be willing to play his idol in theory for Evie when she turned on his alliance with Voce?
Mm-hmm. So for me, this is the product of three more cycles after that vote that we never got to see the dynamics. So, I mean, Evie goes to Shipwheel Island with Jashaun that episode, outs everything about Xander, plans to vote out Xander. Everything flips back because of Tiffany is gung-ho. It's got to be Voce, got to be Voce. And then we have three votes with Brad, JD, and Jeannie on Ua being voted out. And we don't get to see a thing really about the dynamics on Yasa. So my guess is that even though it was still a short period of time, like 5-6 days or whatever, I still think that there are dynamics that we are not necessarily seeing because we just missed all of that. So I think that there's some type of backstory that is like, I mean, obviously Xander didn't know about what Evie had done with Dashaun, you know, telling Dashaun everything, but still, like, I think maybe he never knew that he was going to be the vote that episode and the relationships were able to repair themselves.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, no, it's weird, right? Because you could theoretically think, much like you were actually just talking about with Erica, right? Tiffany and Liana, if they were so incentivized, could very easily go to Xander and be like, hey, just so you know, Evie was really beating the drum to get you out. Like, I had to, if I'm Tiffany, I had to be the one to talk them down and be able to vote out Voce. So you could go home possibly with, you know, without the ability to vote whatsoever. And it's interesting that never came up. Is that a matter of Evie just really making such a great bond with Xander? Is it Liana and Tiffany not making a great bond with Xander? Again, Liana seems to have like the taste of blood in her mouth, ready to bite out of something out of Xander's jugular, that like, does she just not want to have that conversation with him? It is interesting that none of this came up until that moment, which I really did like, you know, because I think we talked about this back during that episode, right? Of, okay, if Evie, like, this could be problematic if both of them make the merge and Dashaun now has this information and he does a really smart thing and does just that. It doesn't, you know, pay off in the immediate future. It might in the long term. But yeah, I think it might be to Liana's point, but also a combination of maybe Evie just has that good of a relationship with Xander, coupled with the fact that he doesn't have that good of a relationship with Tiffany or Liana on top of that.
I also want to flag, like, I keep thinking about the hunger this season, and like I tweeted this, like, it's so unnecessary to really starve them out. Like, I'm not saying they should be feasting every day, but like, give them rice, you know, because I do think that that's a huge mistake. To me, a lot of the stuff that happened this episode was like a comedy of errors. Like, I'm talking about New Girl with Akiva, and a lot of obviously sitcoms is like yelling at the television, like, don't tell them that, just explain, you know, and then it's like, boop, boop, boop. 30 minutes later, they figured it out. That felt like a lot of the missteps here is like, why is Evie not prepared for that? Evie's showing up there knowing that she had this whole thing with Dashaun. Why doesn't she get ahead of it? Xander got caught in a lie with Tiffany, right? And just like kind of was like, whoop, you got me. And they can move forward. Say to him, I told him about this. I tried to make inroads for us later. I told him about this. You know, whatever. Like, or maybe you were going to be, I don't know. Just it should be explained coming from them, because how could you not think Dashaun is later going to out this, especially if, or show up at the merge and try to lock up with Dashaun right away? I also talk what we were talking about before. Evie and Dashaun have that connection. Liana and Evie have a connection. Liana and Shan have a connection. Dashaun and Shan have a connection. Like, why aren't they becoming like a bigger group with those relationships and instead turning on each other?
No, I mean, and I think that this is the instance I think of the most is when Shan talked about Liana's advantage in front of Tiffany. And a lot of people are like, oh, that was a strategic decision. No, I don't think so. I think that that was just like a mistake. I think in part, probably because of the food alley. I totally agree with you. I think that there are a lot of decisions that are being made due to the lack of food. And this episode could be an example of that as well, because you can look through the logic. You can say Liana knew that they knew that she had the advantage. So then either she's thinking it's a double bluff situation where it's like, okay, so they know that I, or like, they know about the advantage. So therefore they're going to try to hide it or put it somewhere else or have Evie have it. But if they think that I'm smart enough to know that they have it, then maybe they'll give it back to Xander. But that, I don't even think that that was happening, because based on the way that Liana was talking, she was just like, no, Xander has it. I'm taking it from Xander. End of story. Not this, oh, they're smart enough to know, to preempt, to know, to know. No, I think that the lack of, not that that made any sense at all. But
no,
that's
it did.
Fine. The lack of food really, I think, is having an effect. And it's something that I think between the lack of food and the bathing suits, like, those are the two. Honestly, even with all the twists, those are the things that I'm most frustrated about, because I want to see players playing at the top of their game, not hampered by all of these other factors.
I mean, listen, to be candid, I think we should be treating these players with, I wouldn't say leniency, but I think we should look upon them and their behaviors the same way as if they were inebriated. There are certain ways where it's like, oh, I'm drunk, I did something silly, I did something stupid. We're like, ah, you know, that happens when you're drunk. It kind of is the same way with these 41 players, right? Like, yes, we might come down on a lot of people this episode. One of the reasons why I really enjoyed this episode is because I really don't think anyone was playing perfectly in this episode. This is a season of sloppy players, which is very fun. But I think if we more so take it under the lens of like everyone had a little too much and now they're attempting to play Survivor, I think that's a way we can really gain some introspection as to like how this season is playing versus maybe other ones.
Okay, I love this idea. So each tribe is under the influence of some substance. Okay, so you can have like the weed tribe, or you could have the alcohol tribe, the cocaine tribe. Now, obviously, you probably don't want to actually give them the substances. So maybe you could do glasses, like beer goggles. So one tribe wears beer goggles. I've never heard of, I don't know, barbiturate goggles. But like perhaps you could have these other, and then everybody competes. How fun would that be?
Someone's just wearing like an electric shock collar or something.
Yeah, that'll go well with the water.
Yeah, was that like the crack tribe?
Yeah, or it could be something for like one of the hallucinogen tribes, like that it's a kaleidoscope that they have to kind of look through. It's not quite, depending on what your hallucinogen of choice is, but like that could be really fun. I think that's a good idea.
It's certainly a way to like bring a twist onto the game, right? Like don't exile them. Instead, you have to wear beer goggles for 2 days, Erica, while you're playing the game.
Yeah, that's the punishment.
That this like podcast should just be called Yes And. You guys
Yes And.
Yes And.
Well, let's start getting into some of our stuff here on the B&B. I'm sure we're going to distill a lot more talk about the season and this cast overall. Actually, just to note on something you said, Allie, all the way in the beginning, because I should say there's been a little bit of back and forth this past week on social media as to like people were rooting for the Yasa 3 versus people that were rooting for the other alliance. And I really do agree with you that like, and I think Beth Dixon actually tweeted this out. It's a little Marge Simpson-y, but like, I totally agree with it. I'm kind of a fan of everyone. Like, I was happy when the alliance formed last episode and that they had a plan together. And I was happy to see the Yasa trio pull this off as dysfunctionally as they did, where Xander, so relatably, in my opinion, is like, all right, I'm not going to play, don't play the idol on Evie. And Evie's like, oh, okay, fine, I trust it. And then as the Evie votes are coming in, Xander's like, oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, no, what have I done? And then he saves, he's like, oh, I guess I was right. Like,
I told
so,
you.
Yeah, it was, yeah, no, nailed it. So
I knew
relatable.
It the whole time.
Yeah, like, it was so relatable, though, of like, you make a decision, you immediately question the decision that you made, and then when it turns out to be right, you're like, oh, okay, I guess it was fine. Yeah, so then it was just all, this episode was all over the place, and I really enjoy this cast overall, but honestly, like, it's not that I didn't have a dog in a fight, I guess I had all the dogs.
Well, that's why my complaint is like, why couldn't you all just work together and get some of the fringe people out? But then that's Nasir. And it's like, how could I be advocating for him to get out? But I agree with what they said on the know-it-alls this week of like, it was sort of a win-win. Like, Xander keeps his idol and his advantage. And if he loses Evie, okay. He, you know, even if they've rebuilt a bond, that got questioned by Deshaun. But also, he has to remember that Evie did vote Voce out. So that's somewhere in the background. And if it works, amazing, it works. But yeah, I was just, I was sad. I just like got no joy in seeing Liana get like bested.
Same. I was like, no, my Liana sister. It's okay. I believe in you.
And I can relate to that energy of like, I want to make this move. And, you know, Liana, you were saying the double bluff situation. Sometimes when I've played these like dumb Kalish fantasy games, it's like, I'm just doing it. And if it's the wrong, like, I don't care. I'm not thinking through that. I'm just going to do it. And like, and so kudos to her for just being like, I'm not going to let them play me. I'm going to take the shot that I want to take. It just happened to not work.
Yeah. But again, it was also again, like, yeah, that win-win of they still, you know, got one of the four people that were not in their huddle out. It was just not the person that they wanted to, or maybe it was, right? Because that's the other question that I'll hopefully get some more information on as more interviews come out, right? Of like, Deshaun has a moment where he's like, okay, let's switch it. did that mean to switch it from Evie or switch it to Evie? Because he's the one who puts two votes onto Evie. Did someone screw up the split vote plan? Like, I do wonder what the intention was.
So I was wondering that too, because, and I have my little psycho chart, but like, so I noticed that the men voted for Evie and the women plus Nasir voted for Sydney. And I was like, did Nasir switch it to Sydney? Because was it supposed to be like men, Evie, women, just like, cause sometimes they break it up like that easily. Because it's a way better vote for Nasir for Sydney to go, because Sydney has been against him this entire game. Because it really doesn't make any sense, if you're trying to flush an idol, to put the majority of the votes on the person that you don't think has the idol, right? It would make sense to put the votes on Evie, so if they don't play the idol, you call their bluff and you get them out.
Mm-hmm. I thought this was interesting because they were also debating whether or not Sydney was going to be the one to have the idol played on her. So to me, if I... My assumption in the situation is, if they're going to play the idol, they're still going to play it on Evie. If I'm Deshaun, I don't want to risk. I would rather have Sydney gone and not risk any type of blowback from an idol, knowing that my name is the other name that's out there. So when he said, let's switch it, I think he was saying, let's put the majority of votes on Sydney, not the majority of votes on Evie. But that was just my read of the situation. I think it was completely a self-preservationist move from Deshaun of, I don't care which one of those two goes, I know for sure I don't want to go. So if there's a higher likelihood it's going to be on Evie, then I would rather us put the majority of votes on Sydney just in case.
But then it's like, why? I mean, I guess that's the point of splitting the vote. But to me, it's like very minimal risk, right? Okay, if one person flips on you, you're screwed, I guess. But it does feel like by the time you're splitting the vote anyway, you might as well put the majority on the person you actually want out. When Sydney won, and all of her exit press, it seemed like Sydney was always close with Deshaun. And then she validates that in her exit press. So I don't really understand cutting off an alliance member, but I don't understand a lot of things.
Yeah, it was weird, though, because, he put the two votes on. I mean, I guess if you're trying to mitigate chances of you going, I'm intrigued that he didn't put one on each. Like, if that's the case, if you're trying to, like, hedge your bet, and if it's okay, because then there's also the shot in the dark involved, and I don't know how much they thought that she ends up going through with it, Sydney does, but I don't know how much they thought that she might go through with it. So it's like, okay, how do we plan around that as well? I mean, the way that Sydney sort of vocalizes it, to your point, is like, despite her being close with Deshaun and Danny, it honestly was that sham conversation that you referenced earlier, Liana, of like, you gotta cut your people, considering that, you know, who was left was Evie, Evie, Sydney, Deshaun, Danny, and Nasir.
Eddie? That's the new muffin.
Exactly, Eddie. That's it. I'm shipping them. The two people that got votes from that side. It was the five of them. Like, obviously, Deshaun doesn't want Danny gone. Danny was clearly his number one. It seems like either he didn't want Nasir gone, or they were just all super afraid that Nasir himself would play the idol. So that was just a, let's not even touch that. Like, let's just skip it. Let's not even throw a vote his way. And then that left sort of like Evie and Sydney as the collateral damage by default.
I mean, Deshaun brought up Sydney before Tribal. So, like, clearly this is someone who, like, he was willing to lose Sydney. And part of it, I think, is because Sydney was willing to work with the Yasa 4, right? Like, she talked about how her ideal alliance would have included the Yasa 3, as well as Danny and Deshaun. So I think that's also part of the reason. I think another thing to consider is the fact that they do know that there's a lot of extra votes out there. And when you're talking about a vote split, that can make things really messy as well, considering who might throw an extra vote on somebody. So I think it's really just each of them has their own logic of what they're trying to predict. But with all these different factors, like, it's such an imperfect situation to play in.
I have one more question for you. And imagine me letting you get to my favorite part of the show, which are the games. But there's so much to think and process about this season. And so it's like, I don't talk to people about Survivor every week.
Which is ironic, again, considering that the players are essentially like inebriated at this moment. And now they're throwing even more things for them to work with.
And I too haven't eaten yet today, so I can really put myself in those shoes, those hungry shoes. And maybe this has been said, obviously, like, Rob's and you guys and everyone's putting out so much great Survivor content. So if this has been said a million times and, like, I'm behind on, like, some interview where they said this, has it been discussed yet, the possibility, and it's not the case, but what if the shot in the dark went to 1 in 5, 1 in 4, 1 in 3 every time it's used?
Yeah. So
that's interesting.
Yeah. So I believe it's not that it is like, if Sydney's scroll had been used correctly, it's not like the next tribal council would have been 1 in 11.
No, but I'm saying it should be. Like, it should be.
Like, the lottery.
So you always have a 1 in 6 chance, right? Or am I making that up? So you always have a 1 in 6 chance every single time because it's a dice roll. But I actually think, to me, I'm not putting this in the game unless I want it to come up safe one time. So I just think it's like very unlikely that anybody, how many people are going to actually use their shot in the dark? And then how many times out of the 1 in 6? I don't know. Liana, your science. That's math adjacent. I don't know. I'm no voter.
1 in 6, I think.
Yeah, science is the next door neighbor.
But like,
math,
but if you factor in how few of the people are going to use it, like, what, or who's going to use it correctly, whatever. So I kind of think that, like, once it's used, that note, that not safe vote should not go back into the urn. And now it's 1 in 5 the next time someone uses it, all the way down until it's like 1 in 3 and then they reset or something. Or the second someone's safe, it resets to 1 in 6. Because, and people might say that's too powerful, and maybe it is, but like, I want to increase the likelihood that these things are going to pay off.
Well, I think that was kind of the whole thing with Jeff with the time turner thing, the hourglass with the hourglass, is that, you know, when he came to Erica and it was like, you have a choice with air quotes, because it's like, either you're choosing to be safe, not safe, you're you know what I mean, like, it wasn't really a choice. And I feel like with the shot in the dark advantage, you can do those types of things that make it seem more and more appealing to people who are in a tough spot if you change the odds, if you want it to happen. So I think it's interesting that they chose to do it with the hourglass twist, but not say with the shot in the dark. Because Allie, I think if you do want someone to use it, I love the idea of increasing the odds, because then, yeah, if you have a 1 in 3 shot, right? Like, that's so much better. Twice.
Or maybe you don't want to use it. And then maybe it also disincentivizes people, because like, maybe Sydney's like, oh, I want to use it, but one, it's like at its least powerful right now if I use it.
Right. Or you could have someone try to burn it, right? Also, so it's
you could have someone convince someone else to do it, right? Of like, oh, you're really dangerous, because then...
Oh, when you said burn it, I thought you meant throw it into the fire, but you meant
like, literally
challenge
burn.
You know what?
Like,
I don't need this. Take it. I'm not even going to open it.
It's 1 in 5 if you burn one of them.
if I eat this, then it's 1 in 4 now.
But yeah, that's...
No, it's an interesting point, because I do think it's actually a representation of how... Like, these twists individually are inherently interesting, but to your point earlier, Allie, it's a weird mixture of things where I don't think the shot in the dark works with the smaller tribes. Like, I think if there were larger tribes, like tribes of 10, you know, 8, etc., we could have possibly seen the shot in the dark used in the pre-merge, but as a result, I think surprisingly so, because from the get-go, people thought, okay, smaller tribes, less room to hide, people will use their shot in the dark more. But no, it seemed like people played incredibly conservatively with the shot in the dark, because they felt like, okay, I have somebody, you know, it's smaller numbers, so I know I can rely on just a couple people instead of a whole group, so I can keep it in my pocket.
That's the thing. Your vote actually is worth more, right? Because let's say you're one of 4 people voting. It's a 25%. You have 25% of the power in that group versus 16.6% repeating of the power.
Liana,
of the shot
how did
in the
you
dark.
Know that?
Well, I had a voce. The great teacher taught us the math.
Something
there.
You were born with.
is this
like,
your,
how does that work?
Is this your Maybelline?
I was going to say, maybe it's Maybelline math.
Maybelline.
So yeah, I mean, look, again, yeah, you're doing the Maybelline math there. You just know what's worth more.
Doing the Maybelline math. That's all my math is, Maybelline math.
Maybelline math.
That sounds like a dance move.
Is that your phrase? Was that a secret phrase?
Maybelline math.
Jordan submit a secret phrase that you had to work in Maybelline math.
Yeah.
Well, okay. All right, let's talk some more Sydney here, because... Suffice to say, polarizing character, even starting with the preseason. So we'll be sure to talk about her, our overall thoughts on her, as we distill it through our preseason thoughts on Sydney. Liana, let's start with you.
You guys have been incredible. I know, like, the placements, like, your mic has, like, lost his entire final or whatever. But some of the things you guys have said, I'm like, my head pops off my body when I listen to it.
Like a skeleton.
You need like masking tape or something to keep it on there. All right. So Liana, what did you think about Sydney Siegel preseason?
All right. Let's see if we can make Allie headless here. So for Sydney, I said pre-jury. So I did have that. I said that she would be a loud mouth in all caps. She wouldn't be able to keep her mouth shut when it comes to discussing the plans, so the opposing alliance can plan around her. I said that she started in the majority alliance, but was quickly ostracized because she just can't get it together. I don't know what that means, but she constantly stated that hashtag big moves needed to be made. Her closest ally was Deshaun and her enemy was Erica.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That felt like it had Puya's fingerprints on it.
Probably, yeah.
Wow, I didn't even know outside consultation was a thing that was allowed on this.
I needed help.
Next time I'm going to ask Jeff Probst if he can help me with this one.
There you go.
All right, so I did have Sydney making the jury. I said that she would complain the most about other people's habits at camp. I said that true to her Natalie White reference preseason, she picks her Russell early on in Nasir. I guess I forgot that she. Oh, yeah. I think in her bio, she makes reference to Natalie White. I said that she wins the first immunity challenge of the season, which is technically true. she is, to your point, Liana, very blunt to people's faces, straight up telling people like JD and Heather they're full of bull. She finds an advantage and is voted out with it in her pocket in the same episode, super confident in her safety. Her closest ally was the seer and her enemy was JD.
So I guess it would have made the merge. I see there. Yep.
Yeah. I'm not going to spoil too much about my Nasir prediction, but I essentially predicted that like Nasir is going to be the big firework of this season. Aww. And like Sydney was sort of like his number two in that regard.
Okay. Gotcha. I mean, this is Nasir, so that makes sense.
I think so. Again, a lot of things you guys said, like the complaint about people the most, Russell early on. I mean, it wasn't Nasir. That was more of like the Deshaun spot, but like definitely the vibes there. I think the fact that you've made an effort to make like a full story through the season, Mike, hurts you here, where JD is also nowhere to be found. But Heather
is also nowhere to be found.
So, and then, you know, very good predictions here from Liana that she starts in this majority and then gets ostracized. Again, I can't understand why she gets pushed out of the Luvu majority, but here we are. Closest alliance to Sean, biggest enemy Erica, pretty spot on there. So I'm going to give it to Liana, but for all of those reasons, but also I really do think Sydney should have made the merge. If you're going to screw these people like this, at least have the screwed person be able to like continue. Although it seems like Sydney wouldn't have wanted to see everyone in Ponderosa. So just the fact that Mike has making the jury and Liana acknowledges that she did not sadly make the jury. I'm going to give it to Liana.
It's like painful truth in that regard. I agree. Like, luckily they lucked out in this case that this person probably would have like walked out of Ponderosa. You know, she even told me in her exit press, right? Like I said at the time, I didn't want to do the reunion. So it's clear that like she was done interacting with these people for some time, but I agree. I think it's a consolation prize that if you screw someone over with like a pretty big series of twists, give them a consolation of being able to at least like vote at the end.
And look, it's like when Corinne didn't make the merge, like you're telling me you don't want Sydney to be the mayor of Ponderosa. Like what the tribal speeches we're missing out on, the expressions, the eye rolls, like I'm so devastated.
Oh my gosh, her on the jury would be so entertaining because she would not suffer fools at all whatsoever. That would be brutal. Oh,
no, well, what she would do in the middle of the tribal council, she would like get up and get snacks. She'd be like, I'm gonna get some cheese puffs.
And what's the problem?
Yeah, also entertaining.
Well, so on that note, I would love to hear from you both. Again, like it seems like especially this exit press, I think has furthered the fact that people either love Sydney the TV character or hate Sydney the TV character. Where do you fall on this? In an incredibly strong cast, where does Sydney fall for you, Allie?
So I tend to dislike people in life and in shows that are remind me the most of myself. It's something I'm working on. And it's shocking because I'm so high on myself, but people with like similar traits.
Oh, no, is that one of the trend names for Liana's season? High on yourself?
Yay.
In a way, it's a drug. So I first was like a little squeaked on Sydney, and then the great Kiwi Weens was like, I wonder how much hate Sydney would be getting if she were saying the exact same things and she was a man. And I was like, that's a pretty fair point, like especially early on when she was like, I'm so great. And then the more I listened to her and the more like she was saying this episode, like of course I think everyone's going to target me at the first opportunity because, like, I'm incredible. And that to me sounds like a very relatable energy. Like, that's something I would say on an RHAP podcast. So I definitely had like a little moment of self-reflection, and now I'm I just relate to her. Like, I think that she's funny, and I think her whole persona of like the press she's doing is like, she doesn't suffer fools, like Liana said, and I have to get on board with somebody like that, or I can't look myself in the mirror.
Yeah. I think for me, the biggest thing I look for in the reality TV contestants that I think are the best are the ones that elicit an emotional response, whether it's good or bad. And I think that Sydney is someone who brought that out of a lot of people. There's a lot of talk about her, you know, maybe more in the negative direction. But I think that that's something that is what you want in a reality TV contestant. So while she wasn't like my favorite person, I think that she's someone who was necessary for the season. And I think she was really fun.
I loved watching her. You know what? You know what it was? Is because this is the first person in a very, very long time that brought the same unique energy as Token Jeans Tyson. Like, Tyson had such that unique energy, right? Where he comes in like just dry as sandpaper in the desert of just saying like, yeah, of course I'm the best. I'm the funniest. I'm the most athletic. Everyone should be jealous of me. Men want to be me. Women want to be with me. What of it? If I could run for God, I'd win unanimously. Like,
someone that, please cut that clip. I want it as my ringtone.
Like, that's the type of energy that Tyson brought. And I feel like we got a little bit of that with Drew Christie, but I feel like Sydney is the first person since then who has that similar type of thing. She has a very similar way of delivering things. Very matter of fact. But I think she's also a bit in on the joke. Like, her first answer with me in my interview with her, right? She's like, what was it like watching this all back? She's like, I mean, I'm a narcissist. So like, I loved watching it back. Like, when you have to acknowledge you're a narcissist, you're not that much of a narcissist, you know?
Sorry to interrupt you. Taylor Cotter, I think, tweeted out something of like, it's her confidence comes off more as insecurity. And I'm like, yeah, that's the bit. Like, that's what we're doing here. We being people who do this, right? Like, I don't show up on podcasts and be like, you're welcome that I'm here, because like, I really think it's like a gift to you that I'm here. It's like part of the bit. It's self-deprecation, but hers comes off more as genuine confidence. And that's like a fun twist on it than it does self-deprecation. But it's, I think it's, what is it? Like, it's in the same hands. Ryan made me forget how to know phrases, but it's like, you know, it's like, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you talking about like,
it's like
the
one hand, it's the opposite side of the same coin or something?
Oh, two sides of the same coin. Just to clarify, the original phrase you had was in the same hand.
Are there hands?
Blue sky.
They're in the same hand.
It's like both sides of the hand, the opposites. There's still something
like
there.
the meme with the two hands, like shaking hands, and it's like the same thing. Like, yeah, Survivor.
What Ali's referring to is when you shake someone's hand and you like are lightly grazing the opposite side of that person's hand.
It's like they go. They go hand in hand.
Oh. Okay, yeah, that was close. Okay.
We found our way to it eventually.
Yeah.
I was confusing two sides of the same coin, and they go hand in hand.
So was this your Kalish phrase? Just let us know.
Brian, I'll be so proud of you.
Opposite sides of the same hand. Oh my goodness. Yeah, and then one more fun takeaway from Sydney before we move on is, honestly, she gave me one of the true phrases I want cross-stitched on a pillow. Which is something along the lines, I believe, of like when she was talking about that, the Heather moment, right? Of like overcoming things. And she's like, actually, it's not that great if you have to start from the bottom, because there's only one direction to go. I have so far to effing fall. I think she said something along the lines of like, you know, it's much harder maintaining greatness than it is working your way up from the bottom, which is just like, that seems like a quote out of like Succession.
Yeah, I need a new quote for my quote board. Maybe that should be it.
I'm headless. That's a great, but it's also a great point. Like, it is often easier playing from the bottom. I mean, query whether she was really at the top when her alliance, like she maybe had far to fall, but it didn't take very long. Like, big tree fall hard in the situation. But I don't know. I think it is a good point that like sometimes the Matt Singh and, you know, the Denise and Malcolm, like, it's so much credit to the people who survive, who are on the bottom, Shan, Ricard, who can scramble. but they have nothing else to do besides scramble. So it's easier and sometimes harder to just go with the flow and not get paranoid.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah,
well, let's start getting into some more stuff here on the B&B. And look, Ali Lasher, all the way back in the day, back in the salad days of 2017, you came onto the B&B and you participated in the very first edition of what is a tried and true segment nowadays, Buff or Snuff, where we rate the fashion choices from the castaways of Survivor. And we're going to do it again. We found one of your wheelhouses here. And so we are doing our seasonal...
Yeah, fashion.
Buffer.
That's what everyone would say about me.
You are a fashionista in that regard. So we have several pieces of clothing for people to go through. If people want to review this, follow along with us, you can go to bit.ly/buff or snuff survivor 41. Again, bit.ly/buff or snuff survivor 41. I am also going to share it here as well on my screen, just so we can have something to look at. So yeah, this is super simple for those that haven't checked this out before. We're going to go through some fashion choices from these contestants and either give it a buff, a thumbs up, or a snuff, a thumbs down. And so on that note, let's start with a buff. Liana, I think this might be the first time we've ever buffed or snuffed a buff before. This is something that was brought up by Davey, I believe, not only when he podcasted with Rob, but I think all the way back in the preseason when the photos were coming up. Xander has a very unique way of wearing his buff, I would say. It's at least the most unique I can think of in quite some time, where he sort of wears it back almost like a cap. Like a silk.
It's like a bandana kind of thing.
It's a buff bushka. Like a babushka.
Yeah, buff bushka is an incredible term, and we're going to use that from now on. So, Liana, do you buff or snuff the buff bushka?
I mean, you know, he's got longer hair, and I think, like, I'm looking at his cast photos, I think it's an awkward length that it's tough to put up in a ponytail. So I think this is definitely a practical choice that he needs some way to keep it out of his face. I mean, it's kind of escaping here in the picture that you've chosen, but I think that this is just a way to keep the hair from getting everywhere. That's my guess.
Is it me?
I mean, do we have a verdict from you, Liana?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Okay. Look, I'm all about practicality, so I'll buff this.
Okay. All right. Form over function.
Yeah. It doubles as like if he's going to go audition for Fiddler on the Roof. I think it's
matchmaker, make me a match.
Dr. Mann and I were talking about how he like, you said some of it's escaping. I think he like intentionally pulls a little out for like
I
a little
think
swoop.
So too. Yeah.
And it's working. I also thought we were going to buff or snuff the whole outfit. And I do have to say that I'm sure he's not wearing a cross for this reason, but I do like any sort of outward expression of something that you could connect with somebody on as just like a nonverbal clue when people are like making their self-assessments about you. So I think that's a good move, whatever that thing might be.
So is that why he has some hair picking out? He's like, I notice you have hair. I also have hair.
I noticed I have great hair. Yeah, so I buff this.
Yeah, I just love, again, it's like, it's such a small thing, but I can't really think of anyone who's worn it as far back on the head. Like, I've seen some pictures of JD and you usually wear it up to the forehead, right? Like, almost like a skull cap. But to specifically almost leave it, I love the buff bushka. I love also the comparisons to it being like an old school sleepy cap, right? With like the floppy thing, like your Ebenezer Scrooge. It's really a way to like foster something. And I think Xander thinks no matter what may happen, like I need to look, I'm going to look good the way that I do it, no matter what. So like, I think it's a fun way to style this buff. I think the yellow also matches really nicely as well. So, I mean, this is a look. This, you might just think, okay, we're just talking about the way a buff is placed, but I do agree with Ali. Like, this feels like a complete package to me.
And look, it's hard to do something new with something that's been consistent for 41 seasons. So kudos. Mm-hmm. And don't at me with pictures of people from like season 7 wearing this. I don't care.
But is this shirt inside out?
No. What makes you think his shirt is inside out?
Because the darker color is on the inside.
It's like it's a there's like a gold print lining on the inside. That little gold line.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think it's just a way to like demarcate the collar.
Okay.
All right. Oh, did you notice I'm darker on the inside with my shirt? I see you do that as well. This is one of the cross things of clothing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, sure. That sounds right.
Exactly. Just assimilating my Xander conversations. All right, let's move on here. I put this in my notes as just Evie's whole thing, because Evie has a whole thing going on between the like the Hawaiian shirt, between the rainbow shorts, not seen in this picture, but also Evie likes to rock a bow tie sometimes. Like, Evie is an entire mood, as the kids may or may not say anymore. I don't know. Allie, what do you think about Evie's outfit?
Flawless, 10 out of 10, 10s across the board. Here's what I love about Evie, and this extends to a lot of this cast. I tweeted when Nasir called them Evie and was like, Nasir to Evie, and it was like a picture of Evie the Pokemon. And she quote tweeted it and said something about it. But I spell Evie wrong. So, like, not only is Evie looking at Survivor hashtags with EVVIE, they're also looking at EVIE. And that's amazing. You know, like, they're just so stoked to be here. They want to engage. They're like fired up. They want to be involved. Like, I love that about this cast. And it's all in good from what I've seen. It's all in good fun. Like, it's not in a like defensive or like weird way. It's like, yeah, I want to find some funny tweet about like Pokemon. That's great. So I love Evie's energy. And that to me is like totally captured in what you said was Evie's whole thing. I love something that's going to become iconic. Like, what's Evie going to wear at the finale? Will it be pineapples? Will it be fruit salad, like a mix of different fruits? I love the lemons, and I love the rainbow boxer briefs, the underwear here. I think something Evie's been talking about a lot is their yay tattoo that people thought was said gay. It says yay, but it's the rainbow flag and expressing joy.
I noticed your tattoo said yay on it. I also like to say yay.
But yeah, it goes with the Xander's cross thing in a certain way. But just Evie is truly who Evie is. And you see it in this look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also buff this. I love Evie's whole thing, especially the boxer briefs. I don't know where they're from, but I want them. They're just so fun, and they pop on screen. Mm-hmm. Whenever I can, even in the background, you know, look, Heather might blend in, but Evie will never blend in, because when you're wearing the rainbow print boxers, you just have to stand out.
Ooh, that's an interesting point. Does Brad's hunting skills is probably do not wear rainbow underwear no matter what you do, or you'll get spotted.
That's right. I would assume so. That's part of the rule book.
That's the interesting thing as well, is that even in, and this photo I think is from the early days, but even in like the merge state, right, when things get progressively dirtier, I feel like Evie's rainbow spandex is still like still standing out, relatively speaking, which I think represents Evie, like a nice, you know, pop of exuberance, you know, wearing their literal pride on their sleeve, or I guess leg sleeves, if that's a term. I can't remember, Liana, did we talk about this shirt? Or did we talk about that with Nasir's shirt? Because Nasir has the pineapple shirt. I believe Evie has a lemon shirt on.
Yes, that is correct. Yes, these are lemons, Mike.
Yeah, do we
you
like
struggle
this?
Identifying fruit? Or
sometimes. I'm not that exotic of a person. Sometimes I have trouble.
Yeah, those exotic lemons, man. Let me tell you.
Crazy. Can't find them in our local grocery store.
Is this like an ironic choice that lemons imply like bitterness and sourness, and Evie seems to be a very joyous person?
No, a lemon print exudes happiness. But it's a good point, Mike, that like lemons themselves are pretty tart, but someone wearing a lemon print, that person's a good time. But from a practical perspective, like Liana was talking about with Xander's babushka, wearing traditionally male underwear on Survivor is such an advantage. Like, it is such a shame when you see women in the bikini bottoms and like, well, what's the state of their thighs? Are they okay? Like, it's just, it's too skimpy. It can't be practical. It can't be fun to run like that. Although I do understand that Olympic runners run in like little bikini briefs. I don't know how they do that. This is a great practical choice also.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
All right. Let's move on here. Two, you talked about her before. You said her name three times. Here's Heather Juice appearing. It's showtime.
Oh my God. It took every bit of me to not do another Heather game, because like she got one line at least at Tribal where she did like some weird hand motion like this, but I like she's still not part of the show. So I am convinced she is some type of plant or something. But that being said, they did give her a bomb.com shirt. I didn't realize it said part tiger on it, which I can't decide if that makes it better or worse.
So that's the thing, is that like I am incredibly intrigued by this. So we spoke about this a bit during the Heather game, that it is a tiger wearing a sweatband. But yes, the text underneath it does indeed say part tiger. I have several questions. I guess the first being, do you want to be part tiger? Is this the animal you want to choose?
Dun, 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 dun. There's a whole song about being part tiger.
Is that the part? Is it the eye? You want the eye of the tiger?
Tigers are camouflaged, right? So, I mean, maybe not in the Fijian jungle.
Depends where.
Their stripes, right? Look, I love the fact that it's got the sweatband. I think that that's sort of an added element that makes it fun. I would probably buy it. I would probably buff this. I think that I don't like the thick strap cut, but the pattern itself, the tiger with the part tiger, although I would remove part tiger. The tiger with the band, sweatband for sure, that I love.
Yeah, the part tiger, the text is taking it too far. The tiger, the sweatband's incredible. Also how it relaxed the tiger looks, but why are you wearing a sweatband then? You know, it's like low stress.
It's cool down.
I'd be remiss if we did not acknowledge the visor. That has to be the best piece of headwear you can wear on Survivor, right? Because especially for someone with long hair. So you got the hair popped out of the top. You're not trapping in the heat, but you've got the sun out of your eyes. And it's a great look. This is my Halloween costume next year. I'm sad I wasn't paying enough attention to this. I'm trying to post something that won't let me post in the chat here, but Scally had one of the best tweets of the night, which was Heather is so invisible, she snuck into the Person of Color Alliance. Yep. And she's just there in a photo.
That's her part tiger. She took the stripes. She can't change them, but she can blend in. Yeah, I'm trying to look this up. I also don't believe this is not like a Derek X like star hoodie thing. I don't believe this shirt is available to buy.
No.
So this then implies, did Heather go to like cafepress.com, like, oh, this looks nice, a tiger with a sweatband and part tiger? I don't know if the message comes across. Let me write part tiger underneath it just to remind people.
Mm-hmm. Just to make it super clear.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know. I might have to snuff it because of the mixed messaging here. I need more specifics on which part of the tiger, or remove her entirely.
Oh, do you think it's like, yeah, like a centaur type situation where it's like you're part tiger, but you're like the back half?
Yeah. Would you rather be the back half of the tiger or the front half?
I think I'd rather it be like the centaur, where it's my body, like my upper torso with the tiger legs.
But
no, but then you walk around like a dog on its legs looking weird.
That's actually a good question. Would it be, because do you have six legs, or you know, the two human arms?
No, you got two legs.
And that's the other thing as well, though. I think it would be a problem if you have to do this immunity challenge where you have to move stuff with your feet and you got tiger paws. Like, wait, they're not made for that.
Does six legs improve the situation? You want the six legs?
Like a centaur. So you know how centaur's got the two legs and then the upper torso with your human hands? So if you have your human hands and then the tiger.
Yeah, but like a centaur isn't really half horse, because it's not like you're taking half of the horse. It's more like you're taking the first two-thirds of the horse and you're putting it on your body.
Two-thirds horse, half person.
Yeah, so
half
that like works out to what, like 4/6 or something, whatever that math is.
It's a 4/6 animal. 6/4. Yeah. Okay. So we'll have to figure that out. I don't remember what we were talking about. I buffed this.
And I think also I might stuff it because it also invokes some comparisons to Carol Baskins, in my opinion, if you wear like any sort of tiger paraphernalia.
Yeah. She's going to sue him, right? So we don't want to get caught up in any type of lawsuit.
Exactly. All right, let's move on here. This was something that was talked about in the very beginning, and it really has been like a constant throughout here. I tried to find a photo of Shan wearing the green shirt with the overalls, because those were big Luigi vibes in the very first episode. But this is one that I could find. Allie, buff or snuff Shan's overalls?
So I noticed her overalls for the first time this week, because I do think, again, the starvation is evident. Like, the overalls have become very large on her in a way that is chic. But I think also, like, she looks hungry, and I'm sad for them. I love the choice of the unnecessary belt over the overalls.
Yes.
It does. It feels very like a kid who, like, has a few items that are very important to them. You know, like, you don't own a lot of stuff. So it's like, well, I wanted to wear, I needed to keep this belt with me. So I put it on. As a look, am I going to wear these overalls with an unnecessary belt over them? No. So I feel like I have to snuff it, but I like it. But I got to stay true to the buffer snuff. What See, are we if we don't stay true to what we say?
Exactly.
The rules are, you know?
This is my one guiding force in my life. This is the cross I wear around my neck.
Okay, good. People will relate to you on that, I'm sure.
I see you have buffer snuff around your neck.
I think from a practicality perspective, overalls and Converse are like the worst combination of things that you could wear because it's like one piece made of denim. That sounds horrible. And then Converse also no support at all whatsoever, right? So that knocks it. However, she looks very chic and very fabulous. So from that perspective, I want to buff it, but I think ultimately I'm going to snuff it because I can't help but look at the practical side of things.
No, I have to buff it because of the belt, because this is Shan, right? It's like, it's a look and I admire it, but there's so much extraneous stuff around it. Like, why? Why do you need a belt if you're wearing overalls? There's nothing that you're holding up. It's all connected. It's all one.
I think she needs a belt, suspenders, and overalls. That'll like really tie the full look together.
Yeah, exactly. So I love the audacity of it. I feel like it's been a while since we've seen overalls on Survivor. Like, I'm thinking back to like Ralph Kaiser from Survivor Redemption Island. I think some people reminded me that Fenella from Australian Survivor also wore overalls, but I mean, to the point of what Rupert brought up, like you said, Liana, from Survivor Pearl Islands, like when denim gets wet, it chafes and rubs. So it's not exactly a functional choice, but, you know, if she's taking the risks and she's drawing attention to herself and she's pulling it off, that really is, again, Shan's game in a microcosm. So I have to buff it here for what it represents.
And there are belt loops and she's using them. It's not like she just put it over, which I used to do in high school, where like you put a large belt around your waist when there was no purpose or loop. So who am I to judge?
I still own those belts. Okay. Like,
I wish I did. I'd love to
wait,
borrow.
Were these like actual belts or were they more so just like here are pieces of fabric that you tie off to almost seem
belt.
Like.
It was a big ass belt. I'm going to find a picture while we're doing this.
Yeah. It was a fashion style, Mike, obviously. Us fashion icons here would know about that.
Well, maybe Shan's bringing it back, right? Like, she's a TikTok star. Maybe this is like the belt challenge. Like, can you put a belt on it?
Put a belt on it. Yeah, sure. I love that. Hashtag put a belt on it.
All right. Let's move on here to Erica. So this little number has popped up a couple times, specifically in her time on Exile. And this, I believe, has some foreign roots. I have to look up the exact name, but I actually believe what she is wearing is a reference to the national dress of the Philippines, which is really cool, considering that Erica is very, you know, upfront about her heritage. I believe it's the Filipino Terno is the name of the dress proper. So Liana, all that in consideration, and the fact that we don't see many of these types of dresses out on the island, period. Were you buffing or snuffing this?
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, at first, I did think that it was about the hairband, which it's blue with all these white little dots
We could talk about the blue Minnie Mouse effort, like the whole ensemble here.
Okay, well, I just want to pick the little white things off. Like, they just look stuck on there.
Oh, like, you're afraid that, like, it came with packaging and, like...
Guys, I put one on so that you wouldn't insult it, so I could show you that I had one before you started talking about it, and
I'm still
gonna
insult it. That does not change, no.
Mine has fewer of them, and it's gray, so it doesn't pop as much. But I don't wear it a lot for the reasons you're saying.
Yeah, I just want to yank them off. But anyway, the shirt, I think it's a shirt, right? And then she's just got regular shorts on. Like, it's not a dress or anything like that.
Or maybe it's, I guess it's more so like a, yeah, it is an dress. You're right. But I think it's more so like
snake skin bike shorts on. I have to put it out.
Okay, that's pretty legit. Yeah, look, the double sleeves, Mike, I don't know if this is too much. Is this also a belt overall type situation where you have both the straps and the side puffy sleeves?
I don't know, because I feel like at least with this, you're covering an area that wouldn't be covered by the straps, right? Like your little upper arm area would be left to nature's whims with just the straps. This at least is able to give it a little bit of coverage.
I see. Yes, nature's whims.
So now, there's no rain on your upper arm now.
Sure. I mean, obviously, I love the straps for the support. The side sleeves really are just sort of the protective armor. Gives me, you know, the shoulder pad type moment, which I think is pretty cute. I wonder if she could take the tie. Is that useful? Can you make a fake idol out of it? It looks like it's attached to the shirt, so maybe not. I think it's cute. I'd buff it.
All right, what do you think, Allie? As someone who possesses an alternate universe version of said headband.
You know what was embarrassing was wearing this headband to watch Survivor at a bar like 2 weeks ago. And I was like, oh, that looks like I'm doing cosplay. No, I really like the shirt. I like the thematic color. I like that color. Blue is a great color. And I did text my friend the other day a picture of the snakeskin bike shorts and was like, should we get these? Like, note, they're very dirty. It's been like 12 days on an island. So I have to buff, like, cause I tried to buy what she's wearing.
Now that's interesting. Yeah. Like, what is it? Like dress like she does, you know, here's all the pricings of everything. That is interesting. You could theoretically take pictures of these wardrobes to send to like, hey, should you buy this for me? But Allie brings up a good point that the condition has to be, just remember, someone has lived in this day in and day out for 2 weeks at this point, so it's not going to look like that in this case. This is a very specific instance of seeing this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's actually a good idea. Like, if I ever had a personal stylist, I'm going to take them this. Like this, but without the dirt splotches.
Yeah, that would be like if I wanted to get my hair cut like Xander, right? Like, I would bring that first photo. I'd be like this, except without the buff, please.
Yeah, I send you guys a picture of me wearing a big red belt over a shirt. And you might say, God, how did I know exactly where to find this in 2007? And it's because I thought I was the cat's meow. I was wearing a black shirt with a big, like, patent leather red belt around the center, black jeans. And what you cannot see in the photo is I was wearing matching red patent leather heels. This was a friend's, like, sweet 16. And my friend's dad told me I looked like, quote, a streetwalker.
What a compliment.
And obviously was like, boom, I know exactly when I was wearing this belt.
Oh my, yeah, you never forget that.
Oh, it says content not available. Well, I can't send a photo here. You'll just have to imagine it.
The cat's meow. Is that the part tiger that Heather is?
Ah, yes. Part tiger with the sweatband and all.
All right. Let's move on here. Jeannie Chen, gone but not forgotten, including her poncho. I think, Liana, we talked about this maybe in the first episode, but it basically disappeared because I would imagine the minute she dumped in the ocean, that thing was unwearable for the rest of the time that she was on the show. But it, as a concept, are you buffing or snuffing Jeannie's drug rug here?
Well, that's the thing. Now that we've talked about Survivor Drug Island, I think that this is like the appropriate attire for that, right? So you get a whole tribe wearing drug rugs. I think that's perfect. Move over, buffs.
What do you think? Oh, should these be the buffs? Just print Survivor so across it.
Yeah, right. That'll go great.
What do you think, Allie?
It's another kind of choice, much like the cross. It like definitely says something about you without having to like say it yourself. So I like clothing that speaks for you as a practical matter. I do think something with Survivor, it's hard to find something that's like warm weather appropriate. And then apparently it's freezing at night. So like, I actually think this is, I cannot imagine wearing this where this is a picture of like the marooning, right? When it first started. Mm-hmm. So I cannot imagine wearing this in the heat of the Fijian day, but to have this at night was probably super clutch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we buff.
I'm surprised when Jeannie wasn't voted out, that Chen's like, Jeannie, can I have your drug rug? Jeannie.
Well, I mean, you can see Shan in the background with her Luigi outfit on. So it's like all comes full circle here.
Yeah, I guess she has her own coverage, I suppose. But yeah, I buff this. I love it. It's weird because I think when you see this, like, listen, if I just looked at this picture, I'm like, oh, great. This is like, you know, this is big Seabass energy. And Jeannie definitely did not bring that. I believe Seabass also wore a drug rug on Survivor, if I'm remembering correctly. Actually may have been the topic of a buffer snuff back in the day. But I appreciate the choice. I love the colors behind it as well. Like, I think one of my favorite things about when they do these tribes and you have to dress within the theming of the colors is like when they sort of match, going back to Token Sheens, right? Like the Timbira was black, but there was a lot of like dark blues and purples. I like here how green is obviously a color, but they're like, it's fine. Green's up like 16.666 repeating part of it. Sure. You can wear this thing if you want to.
Yeah. The Maybelline math here, the Banana Republic math here, I think checked out. Makes sense.
Is that where you get the drug rug at Banana Republic?
I don't know. I was thinking,
is that the technical term?
Drug of rug? A drug rug? I think that's it's the like, only term I've ever heard. What's it I else think it's, is it
I think
called?
It's technically poncho.
Ah.
Yeah,
but
so.
You can have different types of poncho. Like, I feel like this is a subset of a poncho.
Yeah, I think a poncho is like the umbrella term, right? And
not
this is
all,
like a part of it.
Yes. Not all ponchos are drug rugs, but all drug rugs are ponchos.
It's a Baja hoodie?
Baja hoodie?
Okay, sure.
Baja hoodie sounds like the name of like a Gen Z rapper.
Welcome to the stage, a little Baja hoodie.
Yeah, like couldn't you hear that?
I don't make the rules. I just Google them, you know?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about someone that might be listening to Baja Hoodie in his dorm room, because we're going to bookend with Xander here. This was by popular request from Liana, so I'm going to have her start out and talk about this one. Xander's fake idol.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We got a brief glimpse of it, but we saw it none the same.
Yeah, this one was really interesting to me. So I just want to take an aside, because Shan knows what the idols look like, right? Because Shan has an idol. Mm-hmm. So Shan would know that this is not an idol, but I guess they're doing the whole thing. Like, they're trying to make the idols look like fake idols. So maybe it would be, and you know, she's not going to go over there and inspect it with one of those jeweler.
Why
things,
not?
You know,
she should like be that. Doing that. Like, let me, they get let up me, to make votes, inspect it. Let me see.
Let me appreciate this. Or Heather's like, I've got the eye of the tiger. Let me take a look.
Yeah. Oh, wait, well, she knew it was a fake at the time. So it doesn't matter because she had already. All right. Never mind. Take it all back. I take it all back. I take it all
no,
back.
No, she didn't know it was back. Fake.
Yeah, well, he said no, because she asked, Liana asked, do you have the idol? And he's like, no, but you can have this fake one. So,
well, I was trying, cause
no,
I was
he
trying to
showed
remember.
It first. He showed,
yeah.
Oh,
he showed it first.
Yeah.
Okay. All right,
yeah,
never mind. I take it all back. I'll back again.
You're right.
I'd agree with Liana for a second that I thought he just had the package and he was like tapping it on his knee, but he like actually did unwrap it and show it, which is the picture we're looking at right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. All right. So, okay, that's aside from the actual style. I mean, look. This looks like something that I would have made at Bible camp. It's ugly.
Oh, it goes great
but
with the cross.
Yeah, right, exactly. It all goes together. You know, look, to kudos to making a fake idol, getting the shell to work here. I think some credit. It's not the best fake idol we've ever seen. Look, it worked. It served its purpose, so I will buff it, but it's not particularly cute.
What do you think, Allie?
You know what's funny? I watched in one of my many iterations of watching this episode, I was watching with someone who had never seen the episode, and they were like, where do they get beads? Like, this is one of the funnier fake idols, because when you used to watch and it was like, I painted a face on a coconut or whatever.
Yeah.
Fine. Like, you understand, I gathered some paint, or I've kept on to some bits and bobs. And I was like, they have a lot of shit that they give them because they want this to happen. Like, you know what I mean? Like, where does Xander get like a beading kit, the likes of which I would have loved to have as a child? Like, these are legitimate beads. The shell on there is a great touch. I don't understand where he got these materials, but I'm happy he had them. So I love a fake idol play. I love it from when it's a stick to when it's like hit. I just love it all. So I have to buff. And it worked.
It ended up working. I with the beads, I'm intrigued. Could you take apart a real idol to take components
that, yeah.
for a fake idol? Like, is that allowed?
I have to say no. I snuffed that.
I think if you it's kind of like maybe it's like a currency type situation where it's like a bill can be torn a certain percentage, or like you can have a certain percentage missing. But if it's past that, then it loses its value. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, because then otherwise, like, you're just going to walk up with like a shell in your hand. Like, Jeff, this is what's left of my idol. I made seven other fake idols, and this is like a Horcrux situation.
I do think this did kind of look, though, like the real one, in the sense that, like you said, Liana, they're trying to make ones that look fake or fakeable. Because I'm trying to remember, didn't we see the idol last week or 2 weeks ago with Shannon Ricard? And it did kind of look like just like beads on a string.
Yeah, that's the that's the post-Survivor 39 jank idol effect, where now idols just look absolutely shoddily made. And so that's what we're
calling
it
the Mike Bloom effect.
Exactly. Yeah. You're welcome, I suppose. That's my sort of Sydney-esque facetious way of showing gratitude. I do love the idea, though, that it's a bracelet as well, to Liana's point. Like, that's the other great thing about the idol that I put in there in Survivor 39, is there is no way that thing was big enough to put around your neck. This thing cannot fit around the neck of a weasel. Like, how would this be an idol whatsoever?
Put it on your wrist, obviously. Slip it on.
Yeah, like a little, what, the hidden immunity anklet? Is that what it is at this point?
Right. This is my hidden immunity idol toe ring.
I was just thinking toe ring. What is it about an anklet that leads me right to toe ring?
Just working your way down. Actually, I think, I'm pretty sure I had this in my notes, that I believe Sydney not only had a toe ring, but had it on for that challenge where you had to move stuff around with your feet.
There's a non-zero chance I had a toe ring on in that picture with the red belt that no one gets to see.
Yeah, streetwalker wear.
Classic streetwalker.
I bump this as well. Look, it's the first fake idol of the season. May not be the last if Xander has divvied out any other beads with other things, but I really appreciate the effort. I have no idea who would wear this as a necklace, but it's a very fun thing. And also, Xander is, despite wearing a new buff, still wearing it in the exact same style as well.
With the pieces pulled out, I think you're onto something. I think it's intended. It's on purpose.
So Dr. Amanda was like, do you think it's on purpose? And I was like, I do. And that makes me not want to like it, but it looks good. I think, like, it does look good.
Yeah, Survivor 43 moving forward, like, people are going to be wearing the Xander. Like, this is the new hairstyle when it comes to buffs.
Yep, the Xander. I want the Xander, please. All right, so let's close things out with a game that is so stupid.
If you think we're closing it out, because I told you I have a game, Liana.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so never mind. Think of this as simply the appetizer to what Allie has to bring.
The closing of the first course, you know.
Yeah, whatever.
Dinners go.
Good soup. Okay, so I was inspired by the moment at Tribal Council when Liana asked for Xander's idol and he was all just like, psych, no, but you can have this fake one. So, Allie, it's funny that you bring up Dr. Amanda and JCR, because this game is called Psych versus Survivor. So I went to them and I said, look, I've got this idea for a game. I want to do Survivor quotes versus psych quotes. And they helped me. All the shout out to them. And of course, their Psych Rewatch podcast. They helped me come up with some of the quotes for this game. So the way it's going to work is, Mike, we'll start with you, but we'll go back and forth. I'll read you two quotes, one from Psych, one from Survivor. You have to identify which is which. Okay. And as JCR said, Psych, the detective, obviously, he's a fake psychic. Xander's idol was fake. So it's perfect.
What an incredible way to plug a rewatch podcast for a sitcom.
The next game is actually called No Games.
Old Games, in which we read a game and you have to decide if this is not a game or a one we did before.
No. Is this a rule from True American or Survivor?
Oh,
which one is more wacky?
That's actually a great question, Allie. You're the expert on this. Is Survivor becoming more like True American, where it's just a bunch of convoluted rules that we're not necessarily in the know of?
The only distinction that I can make, especially because of your inebriated, like, the way that you're saying they're inebriated, the only distinction is that the creator of New Girl has said that there are no actual rules to True American, and I have to believe someone knows what's going on Survivor. I don't know what it is, but somebody must know.
Yeah, someone in the production team may know what's going
otherwise,
on.
Otherwise, indistinguishable.
No, it's true. I think everyone is very much like that one sketch from I Think You Should Leave, where Tim Heidecker's in his car and he goes, I don't know what any of this shit is and I'm scared. Like, that it feels very much like Survivor production to me.
Yeah, right. Okay, let's take a break from some NGOG and let's talk about IKYDK. So, Mike, we're going to start with you. I'm going to read two quotes, one from Survivor, one from Psych. You have to tell me which is which. Okay, quote number one. I knew I couldn't trust her. She's obviously holding back. Or, She's really a very nice person under normal circumstances.
I am pretty sure. Now, the question is, are these quotes from this episode or from the throughout the season?
From this episode.
Okay. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I remember hearing that quote about, I think it's either about Evie or Evie saying it about Liana. Evie was involved as one of the parties. So I'm going to say that first one is Survivor. The second one is Psych.
That is correct. Yes. It was actually Xander's quote. It was about Liana, I believe, in that moment. Okay, Allie, these two quotes are for you. Quote number one, if you're out of this game, we're out of this game.
Ooh.
Or quote number two, you know, I think you and I could help each other.
So I know the answer to this only because, as I said before we got on, that I try to look for the secret scene, so I'm prepared. And instead, I just ended up rewatching some YouTube clips that I thought were secret scenes. And I was like, when's the secret part going to happen? And that was one of the clips. So
okay.
he says, if you're out of this game, we're out of this game. Xander says that to Evie, but only because I watched it an hour ago.
Look, that's perfect. That is correct.
What if you're like, that's wrong? I don't know what you thought you saw.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
That is interesting, though, because there aren't really any secret scenes. They're all in Dalton Ross's recaps, but I feel like they don't really let us know that. And so they're coming up with titles for these snatches of videos that it's like, did I already see this? I've done the exact same thing, Allie, where I've been like, okay, this thing is called like, Who Do You Trust? And I'm watching it, I'm like, I think I saw this. I don't remember, though. This is a true memory test, or like the true Mandela effect of, have you seen this clip before, or is this completely new?
Mm-hmm.
Totally. But it benefited me here. 1-1.
Well, let's see, Mike, if you can get the same benefit for these next two quotes. So quote number one, to learn that don't matter anymore is really tough for me to process. Or quote number two, and I did all of that for nothing.
I think we still go with the rhythm that we've been going at with the previous two, because I'm pretty sure the first one is what Danny said in his like almost like post game press conference, right? His like sort of like, we're not talking about the game, we're talking about practice moment of what the hell was that. So the second one is Psych.
All right. Yes, that is correct. All right. You guys are doing really well. So Allie, another quote pair for you. Quote number one, nothing can prepare you for something like this, knowing you can't do anything. Or quote number two,
that applies.
What if they give it to someone else? Then this blows away.
Blows away.
Wow.
This blows away.
That, I think Liana said that when she was talking with Shan.
Okay.
But the first one is like so applicable. I'm going with number two as Survivor.
That's correct. You guys are 4-4 in getting these quotes. That's amazing. You guys are really good at this. I thought JCR pulled some really solid Psych quotes.
That first quote, that was really hard. That first quote like probably was also said with just different words.
Yeah. Right. Okay, well, let's change up the game a little bit. I'm going to pull a good approach, props moment. I'm going to not smash the hourglass, but let's turn the hourglass over and change up the game. So Dr. Amanda also had another idea for this game. She said Dan Schiffman, who made the Renat bot, also made an AI that generates fake psych dialogue based on transcripts of actual psych episodes.
Oh, my God.
You can seed it with anything. So what she did is she seeded it with Survivor scenarios and names of players from season 41. So no longer Psych versus Survivor. This is Survivor versus Psych-Viver. So now you have to decide, is this a Survivor quote or a quote from the Psych bot that generated a quote based on Survivor seed information?
No one makes me feel more inferior than Dr. Amanda, because like, how does she do it all? Like, who says you can't have it all?
That I'm still trying to wrap my head around. This is like being arrested.
It's very simple, Mike. It's very simple. It's obvious. Yeah, Mike, what happened here.
Yeah, no, it's like being arrested by a fire truck. Like, the thing is not functioning the way that it should. It's doing something else.
Look, this is Survivor 41, okay? Drop the 4, keep the 1, Mike. You got to be prepared.
No,
right?
You know what? That is Jeff Probst would be like, here's your fire truck. You must arrest one player. Like, that's not the way anything works, Jeff. Start using things for the literal purpose. Okay, so I'm guessing if it's a quote from the episode or a generated quote from an AI yes. algorithm.
Yes.
That just also happens to do it for Psych, but is in this case doing it for Survivor.
The AI, the dialogue is based off of Psych transcripts. So it's based off the way the Psych
okay,
episodes.
Okay, but sort of like Fargo-esque, the names have been replaced for the safety yes. of the victims.
Yes. Essentially, is it a real quote or is it a bot quote? That's truly right, what
that's
you're
a good,
trying
yeah, very,
decide.
Very simple.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yes, very simple. Well, Mike, let's see if you can do it. First quote here is, let's say Xander has the idol, but I'm wrong. In which scenario would you use it? Or okay. quote number two, it's tricky because I have to ask the correct person the correct question. I only have one shot to do it.
Oh, wow.
Okay, this those AI, are two Survivor quotes. Bullshit.
I mean, it sounds like it. I mean, listen, I am all in on this AI just through one quote. Because I'll admit, I was had my expectations low because of the Renat bot and just barely being able to know syntax. Like, this is a legitimately good bot. I believe I'm going to say that number two is the Survivor quote, because I believe that this is when Liana brings up that she only has one question.
Okay. Yes, that is Whoa. Correct. You were able to sniff it out. Let's see if Allie can do the same. All right, Allie, quote number one. I'll tell you what, I've got you covered. I'm going to head up to the tribal council and convince them to give us the idol. Or quote number two, it's going to be a crazy tribal. We've got all these advantages to keep track of.
So I do believe I know it's number one is the psych bot. But I could be wrong. But I was pretty sure on the quotes that they read for Mike, and now I'm positive. Dr. Amanda punched these quotes up. I want to see these tweets yeah. that were generated, Dr.
Yeah,
Amanda.
Because that's what I'm saying. Like, I would imagine it'd be like,
there was some cleanup.
Nasir found butt on tree.
Look, here's the thing. All right, Allie, lock in your answer first, and then we can talk
about
this.
Yeah, yeah, the second one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right. Okay, all right. Yeah, so that's correct. Look, here's the thing. When you put enough monkeys with typewriters, they'll write Shakespeare, okay? We generated enough quotes. We got some that made sense, okay? I promise.
They were punched up, but they should be. You should have punched them up.
Do you have any that were, like, on the scrap paper?
Well, let's see. Let's see if we do. we've got a few more quotes left. Mike, let's go back to you and see if this you feel that these have been punched up. Okay, first quote. Okay, listen to me. Trust me and believe me. You will know before the votes what I've done and you'll feel safe. Or quote number two. Dude, I got you covered. You're just going to sit there minding your own business and I'm going to whip this thing out. Hey, dude, hey, I got a plan.
Hey, hey, look at me. Hey. Look at me. Dude. I'm pulling it out tonight. I don't remember a scene where someone harassed someone by just consistently pestering them with the word dude. I'm pretty sure that the first quote was actually what Liana told Sydney on the beach prior to tribal council.
Yeah, that is correct. At first, I was like, dude, I got you covered. Okay, normal quote. And then by the end, hey, dude, hey, I got a plan. Okay, having a bit of a stroke there.
It's very much energy of like the little kid jumping up and down like, no, pay attention to me. Come on.
Hey. Okay, Allie, two quotes for you. Quote number one. But all right, so like you've been only honest with me and I want to be honest with you. So like Evie's going to be safe. I'm keeping her, you know? Or quote number two. I don't believe this fish can possibly be poisoned. Mention to them that Evie may have been poisoned. I have a plan. Come with me. I've got work to do.
This does remind me, the Psychbots quote does remind me of that scene where they cut to the dead fish head and then cut to Sydney. And I was like, watching that when you know what happens, it's like, oh, it was in the edit the whole time. But yeah, no, the dead fish head, the fish poison scheme, while a great scheme, has to be AI generated.
Yes. So I realize that this bot really likes I've got a plan. Like they've got a lot of plans. So that must be a Psych thing.
Wait, can you read the plan again? I just want to think this through and see if this was viable.
Okay. I don't believe this fish can possibly be poisoned. mention to them that Evie may have been poisoned. I have a plan. Come with me. I've got work to do.
Okay, so the intention is to convince other people that Evie has been poisoned. But
yes.
But the fish is not. So the common knowledge is that the fish was poisoned. You're trying to convince people the fish wasn't poisoned. The real person poisoned is right here next to you, is in this right. very room.
Yes, we're trying to dupe them. Maybe Evie may have been poisoned, perhaps. I don't know. Yes, so you both did fabulous. I don't have a tiebreaker, but I do have a few other quotes that I'd like to read to you.
Please,
and maybe
I'm
you can tell
this.
Me what this is from. Psych Viver or Survivor. All right. You can't blindside somebody, period. Rule number one, never take a risk with a blindside. Rule number two, never give up.
That's got to be Psych Viver.
These were the commandments. Never give up.
I like that rule number one, never take a risk with a blindside. Rule number two, never give up. I think
they were sort of probably creating those sort of just sort of trail of memory, right? They're not really ordering right. them by priority.
Sure.
Rule number All three, right. don't get voted out.
Yeah. Rule number four, don't scheme and plot too much. Okay. Last quote is, and this is from Psych Viver. They're all from Psych Viver. I want you to go to the hidden immunity idol chest in the South Pacific. There, you'll find a tiny but very strong aloe-based gel.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
So, I don't know if that's like a sunburn thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You need aloe
like,
hey, vera.
Yeah, my lips are chapped. Go get me some Aquaphor from the hidden immunity idol chest. Is that the hidden immunity idol chest like a convenience store?
I don't know, but it's the hidden immunity idol chest in the South Pacific specifically. Like it has a location.
Wow. I mean, they might actually get to a point in this season, right, where there's just a big chest full of hidden immunity idols. Maybe you have to put like fire tokens in, like it's a vending machine to get them.
Right, exactly. Or like the claw machine hidden immunity
idol
chest game.
That would be amazing if there were a bunch of advantages inside mm-hmm. a big claw machine and you mm-hmm. had to be able to use fire tokens to get them.
There you go. Yeah, and the claw machine's rigged, so obviously save your fire tokens. But if you want to have a fun time, you know, go for it.
And some, but like half of them are also Jeff Probst dolls.
Oof. Fun. What like a fun advantage.
That's, well, like how sometimes in claw machines, right, like you're not always going for every single prize. Like there's a scattering
right.
of them.
Well, and you got to go, but also you got to consider which ones are at the top, which ones are the most accessible. You know, there's a lot of stuff to consider that might influence what you use your fire tokens on. But well done, both of you. You correctly identified the Survivor quotes. You are Survivor and also Psychviver experts. Again, shout out to JCR and Dr. Amanda for help with this. Very,
that was
very
amazing.
Yes. Yeah, super
I-K-Y-K-Y-K-Y-K. I think I had too many glitters
yeah,
in there.
That was close. There's a D close in it. There, too.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Allie, we're going to finish things off with you. We closed off the first course with Liana, but now we're closing out the meal.
Well, dessert.
What do you have? What do you have for us? Yes.
It's funny because so JCR, when I was watching this with JCR, I was like, I just don't think there's a world where Liana can win the game anymore after this scene. And then also I didn't realize she got the episode title on the My Million Dollar Mistake. And I was so confident. I made a bet against myself. No one wanted this. Nobody asked for it. I was like, I'll start listening to Renap again if Liana wins this season. That's how confident I am, but she's not. And then I was like, well, just through the end of the year, you know, like, because then when's the finale?
Just in case.
Like,
yeah.
But the great Tommy Guam was also there. And he was like, you got to have a game. You're going to be on there, the B&B. Mm. Like, ooh. Jordan had this great game. What's your great game going to be? So I racked my brain and I had nothing. And then this morning it came to me. So reading through Sydney's exit interview, she talked a lot about self-awareness. And I was just thinking, like, you know, the best case scenario with the shot in the dark is that you've played it the episode you go home, even if it doesn't work. Like, that was incredibly self-aware decision of Sydney. She said it again in the exit interview. You know, I'm not stupid. These people had advantages. These people had advantages. So, like, obviously, process of elimination. So let's see how self-aware you two are. We've played this on NGOG before, but Mike and Liana, I went through your Twitters. And sort of inspired by your own Liana versus Liana game, which was so hilarious. And I just searched for Survivor-based tweets.
Okay, thank God.
Both of your, listen, both of your handles with hashtag Survivor or just Survivor and pulled a couple, and I'm going to insert blanks. For some, I have options if you need them. For some, I don't work here. I was lazy. I don't. So let's see. We're going to start with Liana from September 27th, 2017.
Oh, no.
that was right when we started things with the B&B.
This was tough because there's two blanks here. But is Patrick wearing a blank or is that just his blank? I'll reveal one blank if you need more context.
Oh my god. I have no idea what that could be. Oh my god.
All right, let me give you one of the blanks.
Okay, all right.
Is Patrick wearing a pink shirt or is that just his blank?
Nipples.
No.
What? No. His skin, his sunburn. Okay.
I'll give it to you. Is Patrick wearing a pink shirt or is that just his sunburnt skin? Yeah. Hashtag Survivor. Hashtag Survivor HHH.
Now I'm more intrigued by what 2021 Liana did with that sentence. Is he wearing a pink shirt or is that just his nipples?
No, it sounds like something I'd say.
It does. All right, Mike, let's go back with you to December 8th, 2016.
Oh, no.
Yay.
And this is I just really thought this was a clever tweet. And it does involve the great Sunday. So in memory of Sunday, this is not an offensive tweet. Don't worry. Hashtag Survivor the day after. So I'm just assuming the editors took Sunday's namesake on her edit and decided to blank.
Oh, take the day off.
Well, you're on the right track. I do have three options. Okay. Is it so they decided to pray, rest, or throw a Hail Mary?
Oh.
I
don't think 2016 Mike Bloom. If I know 2016 Mike Bloom like the back of an opposite hand, I don't think he would make a football reference in 2016. I think I said rest.
You did. That was right. Okay. So points all around. Liana, also in December 14th, with Squiggly, which approximately 12 minutes of retrospect. This has been a solid season, despite how often I've blanked. And I have options for you, but.
Okay. Why did you give the specific amount of time you were deliberating?
With about 12 minutes of retrospect, this has been a solid season, despite how often I've blanked.
Okay, I have no idea. What are my options?
Your options are, well, I'm saying blank to make sense of the sentence, but
yeah.
Despite how often I've given up, despite how often I've doubted it, despite how often I've cried, despite how often I've rolled my eyes.
Oh, well, yeah. What do you think about millennials versus Gen X, Liana? This is your true opinion.
I'm going to say rolled my eyes.
I suspect.
I'm going to say rolled my eyes.
Liana, I fooled you. It was cried, despite how often I've cried.
What? Sadness? Happiness? I need to tap back into that moment. Like, I thought I would be rolling my eyes at, like, the milk being delivered by drone moment. Not the
Well, no, this was December 2016, though, because this is, like, all the Adam stuff.
Oh, yes. Oh, in the retrospect.
Was it?
I don't know. 12 minutes.
Yeah, exactly 12 minutes.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Okay. All right. Interesting.
Maybe it was tears of gratitude, like Evie.
That's right.
So also staying in 2016, November 23rd, 2016, a little Thanksgiving tweet. Almost exactly, what, 5 years ago?
Yeah, that happy five-year anniversary tweet.
I have to hand it to Jay. You have to. He may be the only millennial I know who used blank correctly.
Oh, literally.
Wow. Mike
How Bloom. Did you know that?
Because that's something that I would say.
It is like something, in fact, that you said.
It is indeed something that I said.
You tweeted it.
I think that's one of like my random takes that just like is living in my brain all the time is how much we don't use the word literally correct as a society, though I don't know why I shunted that off onto my own generation for this particular instance.
Well, it's in theme with the season.
That's
millennial
true.
Gen X, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, Liana. Staying in 2016 was a good year for you guys with tweets. September 21st. I'm so proud of my generation so far. Ooh. / blank. And I have options because there was no context here.
Okay.
And then you did hashtag Survivor, hashtag Millennials. Uh-huh. I'm so proud. Oh, and then also hashtag Reality TV Super Bowl.
Oh, because this must have been... Wait, what was the date?
This could have been the premiere, maybe September 21st. This might have been the big brother finale.
This
was the BB, what was this, the BB19 finale in the, no, this was BB18.
Yes, okay, yes, yes. Okay,
of course.
Yeah, obviously.
I'm so proud of my generation so far, slash blank. Is it slash, and I didn't know we were going to do this, but slash psych? Did you say psych? And then it, like, did you set yourself up for 5 years ago?
Oh my God, time travel, you smashed the hourglass.
I did. I knew enough.
Slash psych, slash sarcasm, slash yikes, or nothing. There was no actual blank, and your tweet was just, I'm really proud of my generation so far.
Okay, well, it's definitely not that.
It was not that.
Okay, why? None of the other answers make sense. Why would you put slash at the end of it?
No, I think, so there's a, on, Reddit, for example, you do a slash S, which means slash sarcasm. So but I typed it out. So I think it's slash sarcasm.
Well, that'll show you how terrible I am with Reddit, because I don't know anything about my generation. I should have just omitted the slash, because yes, it was sarcasm.
I thought there was no space between it. So it was just like, I'm really proud of my generation slash sarcasm.
Well,
like,
that is what it was.
I'm really proud of my sarcasm.
I thought you were just like, as an aside, yeah. Not.
I'm proud of us because of our sarcasm. I don't know. A lot of ways to interpret that.
I'm realizing that all of these are from 2016, but I did put a big pool in with these. One's from 2018 and one is undated. So sorry.
Oh, right. Ooh, I lost it in time.
Mike Bloom, October 12th, 2016. Both people who found idols this season are Jewish. Looks like all that blank came in handy.
Oh, I think it's got to be Finding the Afikoman, is it not?
Damn it, I have great options, too. You really know yourself. And I've played this game, and I didn't get any of them right. It's, like, very hard to do.
Yeah, well, I think, it really helps if you have the same stupid jokes every year of your life. You're going to come back 5 years later. Like, I'm sure if Evie, Liana, and Tiffany found more idols,
you
I
would
could
make
the
same
exact
joke. Yeah.
Same joke. That's why it's just I'm incredibly unoriginal is why I'm doing so well at this game.
Well, I have to plug my own options for this. So I said, looks like all that wandering in the desert came in handy, all that Afikoman searching, which is the right answer, or all that pressure from their moms came in handy.
Oh, those are amazing.
All right, so Liana, November 30th, 2016.
Mm-hmm.
He may be bad at the game, but Ken's still blank, right?
Ooh.
Hashtag Survivor.
That's not this just his nipples.
It's got to be something about him being... Do I have options? Or
you
no?
have
do
options.
I, guess? I have options.
You can probably just guess.
Are they all going to be like hot, handsome, attractive? Ooh.
Now, this
like
is interesting because this is a glimpse at a pre-Puya Liana.
Ken was really hot.
So did you say Ken's still a badass? Did you say Ken's still hot to trot?
Ooh.
Did you say Ken's still handsome or Ken's still totally insane?
Okay, I'm between the two hot options. I don't think that I've ever said hot to trot.
Oh,
so I am going to go with
no.
handsome here.
I think you said hot to trot.
Yeah, you said handsome. Nick Miller said hot to trot. On a new girl. When I wear it, it makes me feel hot to trot. Actually, when Puya came on and GOG, so it's really all
connected.
Full circle.
Yeah.
All right, undated Mike, apologies.
Ooh.
And I think not having the date is going to make it harder to guess here. Man, blank is going to be so pissed he wasn't the first Broadway performer on Survivor. Although this must be about, like, is this Josh and Reed days? So
I guess so. So that's all the way back in, like, 2014.
I went back.
Blank is going to be so pissed. Is it Frankie Grande?
Mike, are you cheating?
What? No.
No, bro. I did this with Mike on the challenge where I was reading a tweet and pretending to guess, but like, Mike, are you kidding me?
No.
Thank God, because the guesses would have, choices would have given it away. The only other person I could think of that would maybe be possible was like Neil Patrick Harris, because he said like he's wanted to play, but like, wow, Mike, amazing.
That's yeah, I know, because that was also like prime Frankie Grande territory, right? Like, I believe his Big Brother season actually might have aired that year, or maybe the year afterwards. So like, obviously very top of mind. So yeah.
Yeah, wait, if that was, yeah, because it wasn't his season in 20... No,
I believe
when
season,
was BB16?
No, I believe
it,
2014.
The summer
so
of 2014. Yeah, yeah,
the
yeah.
The BB16 finale aired on the same day as Josh and Reed made their Survivor debut.
Ah, okay, that makes sense.
So he was
okay,
watching his dreams get crushed by not winning America's Favorite Player, and then to add insult on injury, he finds out he's not the first Broadway performer to be on Survivor.
All right, nerds, let's get back to this. October 10, 2018. I just feel left out because I have no idea what you're talking about, dates-wise. Liana said, blank must be the only food in Slamtown, and I don't have options.
Ooh.
Oh my god. What would be the only food in Slamtown? Okay, so Mayor of Slamtown, obviously jacked. Is there anything else we know? He had a jacket that had Mayor of Slamtown written on the back, but that's not a food. Unless I think I said a cow, because he slaughtered the cow to get a jacket.
This also isn't a food in a traditional sense. It is something you eat, but it's not like, it's a food. That would sound like stupid, but like, there's a twist on it.
Okay, like you wouldn't eat it. Oh, okay. Is it protein powder?
Yeah, I was like, unless you're a real hardo, you wouldn't be eating it straight.
Yeah, right, exactly. Like, no one's going to be just shoveling that in their mouth.
What a great tweet. Protein powder must be the only food in Slamtown. And then, Mike, the last one goes to you. December 10th, 2014.
Oh, okay. So this is within the season of the first ever Broadway performers, then I are not Frankie Grande.
I don't have options for you.
Okay.
I just loved this tweet. Here's to you, blank.
Yeah, get that one, Mike.
You can maybe get it. There's a little context.
All right, so this is December 2014, right?
It's such a stupid tweet.
Here's to you, blank. All right, so it's December 2014. This is end of Survivor San Juan del Sur. Here's to you. I don't know if I would use someone's name just like, oh, here's to you, Keith Nail. I don't think I would do that because that sounds like I'm an old man. Here's to you. Is it like, here's to you, Mike White?
It's so you're making a reference to something. You're adapting something to the season, but it's a reference.
Oh, okay. So is it like, here's to you, Mrs. Anderson?
No, but it's close. Ready? Here's to you, Muffin Robinson. Hashtag Survivor. Incredible tweet. Also, Leon, I don't know if you noticed, there's one I didn't pull, but I did like it. So I liked a tweet from like 2016 today. Because it wasn't worth pulling, but it was a great tweet.
Yeah, I did see that. I thought that was really weird. From December 7th, 2016.
Yeah, read the tweet. What was the tweet?
Okay, so you're better at the emojis than me. So it's sun emoji day was cast on hashtag Survivor after she met with Les Moon emoji Vez. Hashtag very obscure joke.
Hashtag got the like.
Very obscure. Very poor in retrospect for many, many reasons.
I think it holds up. It's a great use of emojis.
Wow. Here's to you, Muffin Robinson. And here's to you, Allie Lasher.
Here's to you, Muffin Robinson.
I guess I'm assuming this was a scene with like her and John Mish, like, because it was probably a graduate reference, I would assume.
It was just, it stands alone. The tweet stands on itself.
I would say, and this is pre-Wandoff too. So like, I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea. That was delightful. That was so much fun. Allie, thank you for bringing our past to light and having us see whether or not like we're unoriginal little shits like I am, or whether you're like lusting after men and making emoji jokes like Liana's.
Mm-hmm. It was fun to go through your tweets.
Oh, man. Yeah, I need to, I gotta retweet that protein powder one. That's pretty solid.
here's a pristine take from me from 3.5 years ago.
Oh my god, I made a turning the hourglass joke on the Masked Singer podcast this week, and Puya was like, what a dated reference. And I was like, that was like 3 days ago.
People are over it, Liana. They're on to other bigger and better things.
The Slamtown reference is really gonna get him going.
Oh my goodness. Well, Allie, we're going to continue to keep the spotlight on you because every week on the B&B, our guest is able to come in and highlight a charity or a cause that they would like to draw attention to, much like a fake idol that Xander is holding up. So the ball is in your court. What would you like to highlight this week?
Yeah, I love that you guys do this. Let's just flag the ACLU. You can donate locally. You can just donate at large. working for all sorts of things, immigration, LGBTQ rights, reproductive rights. You can donate just specifically to work on abortion bans, against abortion bans. Great, important organization for people around the country. Flagging
absolutely
that.
Yeah, so ACLU, you know, like you said, look up your local chapters or just go to the website and make donations. Allie, it is always an incredible pleasure to have you on. This time is no different. It was a wild episode. It was a wilder podcast, and I'm happy.
I'm sad it's over. What am I going to look forward to now?
We were all part tigers today with how wild things got.
Oh, man.
Just
so
one
fun
eye and Liana's six legs.
Yeah, but which types of legs?
I'm
yeah,
drawing
you
it
do,
now.
How about two and two? Like two tiger legs, two human legs, and then two tiger legs.
Didn't I draw last time I was here? I just drew again. I drew some weird things last time I was on the B&B. This is like what you're talking about?
Yes, exactly. How do you wear your pants?
Like this. What? Just on the okay back legs. Just on the ass.
No, I wear overalls.
Just on the back legs.
That's where the overalls come in handy.
Okay,
and so big, wide belt, right? Well, I think the belt ends up here, though. So I really have to think about it because I think the belt stays with your waist, but the pants are back here. So it's more of a shan.
Right. Well, I mean, those belts were just for style, the pinnacle of style anyway. It's not like it was there to hold up your pants. So.
And you're not covered in worms. These are supposed to be tiger stripes.
No, you're just sleeping in the dirt with the worms. And that's why they're crawling all over you.
Some good dewormer for you.
Well, if people want to get down and dirty, but not on the Justin McElroy level with the challenge this season, Allie, how can people check out what you and Brian are doing or follow you on social media?
Yeah, check us out. We're right in the meaty part of the season and Challenge All-Stars is starting up. So you could check us out at robsthewebsite.com/challenge iTunes. You can follow me at LashTweets. And if the psych style game, wet your whistle for a podcast talking about an old sitcom, you can check out me and the great Akiva Winokur talking about New Girl on New Girl Old Guy, terrible name, decent show. You can check that out at anchor.fm/newgirloldguy.
Can I ask? So please. I'll admit with every challenge season, there is a point where I sort of like drop off in terms of attention just because it's so damn long and the people sort of vary in terms of like how much I actually want to watch them.
This from the man who does like 5,000 hours of podcast and interview.
Exactly.
Content.
Even I have my limits. Have we hit that point this season, or do you still think the way they've changed things up makes things interesting in this intermediary?
So actually there was a big, at this point, you shouldn't have watched the first like 5 or 6 episodes. And then there was a point where the individual pairs got swapped to 3 tribes, 3 cells. And that's where things I think have really picked up. People are down on the season. I respect people being down more than anyone, but I'm not. I've enjoyed it. And I think if you started episode 5 or whenever they went to 3 teams and you didn't miss anything before that. So it's like the reverse. There's not a drop off period. There's a pickup period.
Yeah, no, it's actually been super interesting because it feels like a completely different season. I think, Allie, you and Brian have talked about this, that you could really, you know, Mike, pick up with wherever the team twist started. Plus, they've got some really fun names. It's not just, you know, blue, red and green. So,
no, I think this past week was the first week that I stopped watching. I think it's just because like the veterans.
Oh, so you made it to the team twist.
I also know that some people the team twist even has some other. I think it's just also the people that are on right now I'm not like incredibly invested in, which I think.
All right, the B&B is now banned from the challenge.
Don't like, look,
this is such an anti-challenge podcast. It's unbelievable.
No. Watch the challenge. Watch the challenge.
I started watching 7 episodes and right when you're saying it's gotten good, I gave up on it.
His comments do not reflect on me. Okay?
That's true.
Oh, wait. Should I refer to the text thread where Liana told me what to say?
Should I refer to the text thread?
No, I actually have been really enjoying the season so far. It's just that this past week I wasn't watching and I was like, I was honestly for me like, should I keep? Because the past few seasons I have dropped off like at the 2/3 mark and I didn't know if this was the same thing.
Go to the end.
Rob, Taryn, you're very like, we get it. You have no taste. We understand.
I mean, listen, did you read my tweets from 5 weeks ago? Here's to you, Muffin Robinson.
That was, you know what? All is redeemed. All is forgiven. That was incredible. That's the next tattoo. Think about it.
Yeah.
I had seen that tweet, you know, I would have submitted it and I would have had someone design it. I would have like thrown money behind it. Like,
oh, yeah.
Here's to you, Muffin Robinson, with like a muffin with a cast on its leg.
Yes.
And then Steven and Rob being like, who's Muffin?
So they would be in it as well.
It would be a whole scene, a full back piece.
Oh, yeah. The whole like prison tat just down my entire back of a muffin with a cast on. An anthropomorphized muffin and Steven and Rob in the background.
And then we'll get Baylor being like, we'll just show up like on the side. We'll really work
like
a lot of things
over
in.
Or something. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll have her on my rib and just like peeking over like one of those drawings you make of someone peeking over the fence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can control how much you show people. It's your arms up, then Baylor's there. And if it's down, she's not.
Oh, that's true. Like, I'm really showing you like a vulnerable person to myself. Let me show you my Baylor. I've never showed a lot of people this before.
Oh,
dude,
no.
dude, I'm whipping out Baylor tonight. Dude,
whipping it out.
Here's my plan, man.
I'm whipping this out.
You mentioned the Masked Singer podcast. What's been going on with you this past week?
Yes, you can follow me on Twitter at LianaRHAP. Puya and I talked about this latest episode of the Masked Singer. It's been a lot, like really just a ton of fun. There was a absolutely horrendous performance in the best way possible this episode with the wild card twist. So I highly recommend checking it out. The greatest thing about the Masked Singer, every episode is a jump in point. Who cares? It's the Masked Singer. It doesn't matter if you've seen the previous episodes. It's all fun. It's all silly. It's all stupid. So I recommend checking out at least the podcast, but the show as well.
So it's like, it's not a highway. Like, it's just a dirt road where everything is an exit ramp. You could just get on whenever you want to.
Yeah, it's all exits, all on ramps, you know, whatever. Come, leave. It's fine. It's all a mess anyway.
The funny thing is when I was going through your tweets, Liana, I first accidentally started with your professional Twitter. And I was like, Liana has never tweeted about Survivor. This can't be right. Like, something's wrong with the algorithm. And I was like, oh, this is the wrong Twitter.
That makes sense. Yeah.
So you can follow me at a Mike Bloom type. Allie had some very kind words for the interview that I did with Sydney, which is truly wild. I, again, highly recommend you check out any and all exit press that Sydney did this week, whether it was me, Rob, TV Line, Dalton Ross. She does not mince words. And she also fills in some blanks about at least her feelings on that old Luvu, where we didn't really get to see them go to tribal council. So check that out at parade.com. Doing the usual podcasting stuff with Lost and The X-Files over on post-show recaps. Also did some other scripted stuff this week. I was on BoJack Horse Pod with Kirsten and Lindsay talking season 4, episode 7. Mostly, we use it mostly for me to talk about how I realized there was a good 5 years of my life where I wanted to be Zach Braff in every way.
I see that.
If you want me to awaken that part of my life, be sure to check that out on all podcast platforms of choice. So next week, Liana and I are going to be welcoming back to the podcast as well another recurring guest, Peridium,
is
going to be making a return to the B&B to talk through whatever episode 8 is going to be. You know, a lot of people have been saying, okay, we had our weird twisty 2 episodes. Now we can sort of move on from there. I don't think we will. I'd like to hope that at least next week is going to be a bit of a cool down episode. But no matter what, Peridium is going to be here to break it all down. Maybe he'll bring back that, he'll continue on the streak of guests bringing in games and bring his Family Feud game back in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really excited. I think it's going to be fun.
And if you have game suggestions, be sure to send them in rhapbnb@gmail.com, or you can tweet us using the hashtag rhapbnb. Again, if this game is any indication that Liana played, we are open to any and all ideas, and we have received a bunch of ideas so far. We're parsing them throughout the season, so we are incredibly grateful for that. Honestly, like, even if it's just a seed of an idea of, hey, you guys should do a game around this, feel free to reach out, because we love hearing from the listeners about the games that they want to see and have us try out. We're trying things. We're seeing what works, much like Survivor 41. So that's going to do it for this week on the B&B. Special thanks to Scott St. Pierre for editing everything behind the scenes. Wolf from America for this theme song. Let's thank Dr. Amanda and JCR as well for coming up with some great psych and psych-viver quotes. We'll be back next week with Peridium breaking down episode 8. Thank you all so much for listening. Until then, we'll check you out at your next.
Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the RHAPBMB. Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool. I can tell you the name. It's the R.